Good evening. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2020. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions, that's questions plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. You can click on our donation tab on our right side of the website. Okay, tonight we're going to pick up where we left off last week. I think we're coming into Romans 9. I didn't open up my program yet, so we'll start reading through it, and we'll get the words up on the screen in a short. Okay, so it'll be Romans chapter 9, I believe. Yep.
The book of Romans, chapter 9. I say the truth in Christ, I lie not, my conscience also bearing me witness in the Holy Ghost, that I have great heaviness and continual sorrow in my heart. For I could wish that myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my kinsmen, according to the flesh, who are Israelites, to whom pertained the adoption and the glory and the covenants and the giving of the law, and the service of God, and the promise. Whose are the fathers, and of whom, as concerning the flesh, Christ came, who is over all, God blessed forever. Amen. Not as though the word of God hath taken none effect, for they are not all Israel which are of Israel. Neither because they are the seed of Abraham are they all children, but in Isaac shall thy seed be called. That is, that which are the children of the flesh, these are not the children of God, but the children of the promise are counted for the seed. For this is the word of promise, at this time will I come, and Sarah shall have a son. Not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one, even by our father Isaac. For the children being not yet born, neither having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him that calleth. It was said unto her, the elder shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob have I loved, but Esau have I hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? God forbid. For he saith unto Moses, I will have mercy on whom I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whom I will have compassion. So then, it is not of him that willeth, nor of him that runneth, but of God that showeth the mercy. For the scripture saith unto Pharaoh, Even for the same purpose have I raised thee up, that I might show my power in thee, and that my name might be declared throughout all the earth. Therefore hath he mercy on whom he will have mercy, and whom he will he hardeneth. Thou wilt say then unto me, Why doeth he yet find fault? For who hath resisted his will? Nay, but, O man, who art thou that repliest against God? Shall the thing formed say to him that formed it, Why hast thou made me thus? Hath not the potter power over the clay of the same lump, to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show his mercy and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of mercy, which he had afore prepared unto glory, even us whom he had called, not of the Jew only, but also of the Gentiles. As he said also in Oath, I will call them my people, which were not my people, and her beloved, which was not beloved. And it shall come to pass that in the place where it was said unto them, Ye are not my people, there shall they be called the children of the living God. The Isaiah also cried concerning Israel, Though the number of children of Israel be as the sand of the sea, a remnant shall be saved. For he will finish the work and cut it in short in righteousness, because a short work will the Lord make upon the earth. And as Isaiah saith before, Except the Lord of Sabaoth hath left us a seed, we had been as Sodom, and been made like unto Gomorrah. What shall we say then? That the Gentiles, which followed not after righteousness, have attained to righteousness, even the righteousness which is of the faith? But Israel, which followed after the law of righteousness, had not attained to the law of righteousness? Wherefore, because they sought it not by faith, but as it were by the works of the law? For they stumbled at that stumbling block. As it is written, Behold, I lay in Zion a stumbling stone, and a rock of offense, and whosoever believeth on him shall not be ashamed. That was the book of Romans, chapter 9.
Okay, tonight we don't have a particular topic, so we're going to go through a few things and then go over to Brent and then into an open forum. Jen, do we have any announcements, I guess, first off? If you're talking, Brent, we're not Jen, we're not hearing you.
Sorry about that, Joe. Yes, there was one that I wanted to bring up here. Let me pull it up quick.
And by the way, while we're waiting for Jan to get that information or those questions or whatever, you know, we're still looking for leadership here. Anybody that wants to volunteer, we need lots of people to volunteer as district leaders. We have 10 districts. We've broken the 50 states up into 10 districts. And we do need more district leaders. And we'd like to have more than one, more than even two in each of the districts. We're also looking for state coordinators who work with the district leaders, and basically they're going to be looking to organize their state by working in each of the counties within their state, looking for a leadership to work on the grassroots level, to encourage people to get involved, to become committeemen, to take back the political process, to become administrators. We need 4 administrators for each county. To take back the judicial process, to rebuild our militia, and to have a true militia where the people are all involved on their grassroots level. And also, another part of our program, we've got quite a few things we're going to be working on, but one of the major things we want to work on as soon as we take back our courts and start to developing our committeeman process is we definitely want to take back our schools. Our children are being trained to be socialists. They do not know their heritage. They do not understand anything of who they are as a people. Just look what's going on. I was watching something live down in New York City. At least it said it was live. Maybe it was old. But anyway, a lot of people marching down there, a lot of young kids mostly, probably, college level, some high school, some college level, and maybe some people in their 30s or so, but it's mostly a young crowd. And they're totally ignorant to what we are as a people and what we have as a nation and what our heritage is, and they're really pressing forward, ultimately, to socialism. And they've been practicing from some of the things that we've been hearing, what's going on, especially out in Seattle. They've been practicing Nazism, like the brown shirts. And all this in the name of, I don't even know. They don't even know what they're out there for. I think they just have nothing else to do. I don't know. But they're not being constructive. They're certainly being destructive. And we have to recapture our children. We have to take this nation back. We have to take back our courts, our political process, and total control of those people who are we elected in order to exercise the authorities and jurisdictions that we've given them. And But they're doing anything and everything, but they're lining their pockets and ignoring the people and trespassing on our liberties. So anyway, anybody, we need lots of leadership. You know, we're coming up on almost 9,000 members. We need lots of people to really get involved. We need people to get involved on the grassroots level. And anybody who's looking for a good career or a job, those things will be available soon on a grassroots level for our administrators. We're looking again for 4 administrators in every single county that will work in the courts, take the process of pulling together and orientating the juries away from the judges, away from the prosecutors, and bring it back to the people, and bring it back to the where the people can access their grand juries if they have any concerns. Right now, you know, you could literally be arrested trying to go and talk to a grand jury if you're persistent. We know of an individual who went to jail for 2 years because they were trying to talk to the grand jury to reveal corruption. Couldn't go through a prosecutor because the prosecutor would never allow him to see the grand jury. And eventually they did arrest him. They arrested him for stalking, believe it or not. And he was convicted and given 2 years in prison. Very, very strange situation. But that's how far away from who we are as a people that we have come. And nothing's going to change. It's going to get worse. Even with Trump in power, at some point in time, it's just going to continue to back down the same old track again until the people decide to have government by the consent of the people. Well, we, the people, consent. We say yay or nay to who's going to get onto that, you know, who's going to get onto the ballot to become elected for whatever it is, whether it's local or out there in Washington, D.C. We, the people, need to take control to say no more funny money. Taking money from special interest groups, as far as we're concerned, is a bribe. You're selling your vote. We, the people, need to take control of these things. We need to take control of our courts and open up common law courts so we can get true justice and not the injustice that we receive daily. These people have no conscience. I wonder if, you know, if they even have a soul. They just go on and on, lining their pockets and performing evil upon the people. And they don't seem to have any compassion or concern of all the destruction in their wake. It's time to put them down. But it's up to the people to step up to do this. And, of course, we're talking about taking control, bringing them into the courts of justice, and giving them their fair share of justice. But, again, if the people don't step up and take these powers, take these authorities, and it starts with organizing the nation, organizing your county, organizing your state, organizing your district area, organizing the entire United States, and getting people involved at every level, getting the sheriffs involved. We have a plan with that, and there's some exciting things that may be coming up in the near future that will help to even push this further along. But again, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect it never was and never will be. So we do need to re-educate ourselves and come to understand what our true heritage is and what the truth is about our founding fathers and then take control of it so that we can have government by consent. But remember, without that education, you can't have government by consent because we need to get that education, that education that Jefferson spoke about. So anyway... Anybody interested in getting involved to save this nation, connect with Jan. You can find him under, he's a director under the directory, National Leader. You can drop him an email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and he'll forward your information to someone who can address whatever it is that you're looking to do to work with us. We need paralegals. We need people who can do research. We need all kinds of people who can organize. And we've got various committees going. I'm sure there are committees we haven't even thought about. People can come up with some ideas that maybe we need a committee for this or a committee for that. But if we're going to save this nation, it's up to you. Only the people can save America. Jan?
Yes. I received a note this week from one of our members who's really in great need of our help. His name is Ron Hatton. If you can help, it would be greatly appreciated. And here's what he had to say. Hello to you, my friends and associates. I was almost murdered on Wednesday, June the 3rd, after agreeing to take a man to visit his ailing mother in Stockton, California. When I was dropping him off, he was beginning to scare me. He beat me severely, and since I wouldn't just let him steal my van, he drug me a quarter mile down the road with my body stuck under the van with a flat tire before managing to throw my body into a guardrail at about 30 miles an hour. There's almost none of my body that isn't damaged. I need assistance in many ways. I have lost a goodly proportion of the skin down to the muscle on my left side, with less damage on the other areas, and not a portion of my body untouched, save for my right ring finger and my winky. Thank God for that, and it's more painful than anything I can remember. I can't even imagine until now. I don't like asking for help, as you all know. Also, I have dedicated my life to helping others for more than a decade, and now need help in the worst of ways. I thought I would ask you all to help spread the word to your friends in the hope of meeting the tremendous financial burden this has put on my life. I would love it if you could take a moment to check out my GoFundMe campaign, and he gives the website, and I put this in the newsletter for this week. He says, your support would mean a lot to me. Thank you so very much. I mean it. Signed, Ron Hatton, the Gadget Man. So if any of you out there have the ways and means to help Ron, it would be greatly appreciated. And that's the only announcement that I had for tonight, John.
Well, what's his GoFundMe page? I know it's probably GoFundMe.com or something, and then / something.
It's GoFundMe.com/F/UTM_source=customer_medium=email_UTM_campaign=P_CF+share-flow-1. You'll have to...
Well, you would really think that they would make it a little simpler than that.
Yeah,
right?
I know. You're not going to get it from the reading. You'll have to look it up in the newsletter.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, logic, you know. I mean, you should put the person's name or something, or some kind of a simple name. But you can always put a date in the name, you know.
Yeah.
And that would prevent repeat problems. All right, well, anyway, it's in the newsletter. Anybody that would like to make a donation and assist, there it is. Okay, do we have any questions?
Yes, we have several questions. The first question is, I don't use Facebook due to DARPA origins. So what protocols do you have in place to prevent member tracing?
To prevent member what?
Tracing, he's assuming through Facebook or email or whatever you're using to contact NLA or vice versa.
Yeah, I don't. Well, we don't. Well, we do have a Facebook page. I don't even go on Facebook, and Facebook is not part of what we normally use. But we did put up a Facebook, and there are people that manage that. But but I'm not understand, and we don't use Facebook in any way for emailing. We're doing our emailing. If that was part of the question, I'm not sure. But our emails are generated right on our website, and sent out from our website. So I don't really understand the question more than that.
Yeah, people are worried about getting hacked through Facebook and all these communication nets.
Well, I don't trust Facebook, and that's why I don't go out there. I don't have my pictures up there. My family pretty much stays away from it too. So, Facebook is a problem. So, but it doesn't affect us. I mean, we're not connected to Facebook other than the fact that we do have a place where you can, I guess, click. I'm not even sure what that is. They have a thing on the side. I guess that's just showing that you like something or don't like something with that Facebook, or does that connect to our Facebook or on our website? What is that? Do you know, Jen?
Well, they're worried about being tracked, I guess, maybe as having gone to Facebook, our Facebook page, and that sort of thing. They want assurances that that won't happen, I think.
Well, I have no idea even how to advise them on that. I don't know. I don't know what to tell them. So. All right, next question.
For Flag Day, Sunday, June 14th, C-SPAN 3 Weekend History Channel did a presentation by the author of a book about the American flag. This author stated that whether Betsy Ross was the true maker of the first American flag is questionable because the only evidence of her being the maker of the first flag is family affidavits. Question being, is a family affidavit less reputable than any other affidavit? Important to note, whether the Ross affidavits were challenged was not stated.
Again, I'm not too sure what the question is. Do you?
Well, he's talking about using family affidavits. In other words, you know the person.
Your family, someone in your family can write an affidavit on your behalf. It doesn't matter that they're related or not.
Right.
Is that really the question, Matt?
Yep, he was just wondering if that was a less reputable than any other type of affidavit.
They're human beings, they can attest, and that's it, period. You know?
Okay.
Okay, next question.
I have court, and this is going to take a little bit, in a few weeks on my second order to show cause to hold my ex-husband in contempt for violating our divorce decree and denying my parenting time. He has had custody, which I signed over under duress on a temporary basis in 2013 when he blackmailed me with incriminating photos. We were supposed to revisit after 6 months, but they entered it in my decree pro nunc tune. I've been through 5 attorneys, mediated several times, and he still refuses my parent time consistently. In the event that the judge refuses to make a ruling on my behalf, how would I enter in as counsel during the proceeding and establish jurisdiction? What paperwork, if any, would I need to file on top of the order to show cause and modification? How can I move forward? My son is hurting himself and others. He needs his mama, and his dad continues to bury me. He's refused to modify child support because he makes too much money, and in 2018 I was forced back to work 24 hours after my daughter was born to avoid a debtor's jail sentence. I almost died from infection, lost my business, and was on home health and hospice for several months. How do I sue him and the state when they refused to modify my support? I owe thousands, and the court has taken thousands and denied me any access to my children. Any and all help is appreciated.
All right. Well, look, at the problem really goes back to getting a proper education. And, you're not going to win anything in these courts. They're RICO and steroids to begin with, and you don't really get justice. Family courts break up families. They have no intentions, no design, no desire, nothing to try to bring families together. Why they even call it family court, and I have no clue. It makes me sick to my stomach. But, family court definitely should not be run by lawyers and judges are lawyers, because you have all these people, and they don't care about nothing. And time goes on and on and on, and more destruction. It's all, in my opinion, the whole thing is designed to destroy the family. That's what it's about. It's a deep state, process, in my opinion. I don't know, but it is destructive, nothing but destructive. But the only way you're going to try to be able to get any kind of any kind of justice here, in my opinion. You know, when we get onto the other side meaning that the people take back control of the judiciary, and that's not going to happen until the deep state is finally pretty much annihilated, or at least the major arrests are made and they fall apart to the point that they can't hold on to any more power, because they're still holding on to power. But once these major arrests take place, at some point in time after that, is kind of the other side of what I'm talking about, where the people come in and take control of the courts, which is what is necessary, right, and just, and the way it should be. Courts of record are run by the people, not by elected individuals, not by appointed individuals, not by judges. Judges, you know, most judges are elected. On the federal level, they're appointed. And in some places, I'm sure on a state level, they might even be appointed too. And in some states, I really don't know. I know in New York, they're all elected. But these people, they're political animals. They belong in equity courts and not courts of law. They wear two hats. One is an equity hat, and the other one is a magistrate. So in one, they act as a judge in equity, which can be appealed. And the other one, they act as a magistrate, which means they're only an administrator of the court. They're there to make sure that the will of the jury is expressed and documented. They're not to participate in any judgments or any decisions. Of course they do. They take control of that. They abuse that. And we got to take it back. We got to stop that. The courts are supposed to be the people's court. We are judged by our peers. Our peers make the decision if there's a crime. Our peers make a decision if we have a contract disagreement or even if it's a criminal offense or whatever. Our peers should be making the decision, not a judge. And that's where we got to get to. But that's going to take, some more time, probably. You know, I'm hoping this year. I think it's going, well, I don't think we can get away with going beyond this year. It's got to break soon. Anybody watching what's going on, it's going to break soon. But in any event, that's one way. And then at that point in time, once people take these administrative jobs and take control of the courts, get themselves educated, and that's why we should be educating ourselves now. Now is the time to educate. Not when we have access to control and people don't know what to do, and we're going to lose a lot of time educating people during that time period. People need to get educated now, and by taking our courses, we have numerous courses. But in any event, once we get on the other side and we have juries that are truly free and independent juries, which will hear a story, they can fix this problem and get justice. Trust me, a grand jury can get justice and all these things. A properly called, free and independent grand jury can fix this problem. So that's one way. And then people have access to the grand jury. But until then, you're kind of on your own. We might be able to assist you with some paperwork if you want to do a joinder in some of these cases. We don't get a lot of a success in it. We do occasionally. And we don't get a lot of success, but from occasionally we do. But the key thing is at some point we will get justice. All these cases will get justice. When these judges overstep their authority and they're told that they don't have the authority, that they're overstepping their jurisdiction and they need to cease and desist because they cannot give due process, when they ignore that at some point in time, we give them quite a lot of chances to do the right thing through our paperwork. But when it comes down to it and they finally just keep saying no and ignoring us and keep doing their evil, then we end up indicting. And we've indicted quite a few judges already. I got to believe it's got to be close to 100 judges already at this point in time. We've got a whole bunch of judges that will be going up real soon for indictment once they obey the final paperwork that we've set up. The only thing you could do now is, and you should be doing it anyway, is educate yourself. Take our courses, and then we can give you some thoughts and advice. But you need to be able to understand the system. You need to be able to write your own papers. You need to be able to articulate yourself in the court. And you can then take these things all into federal court for cause. They don't like to get involved in these cases, but if you put the pressure on a federal judge, and you kind of put him between a rock and a hard place where he didn't really have any place to go. He might do the right thing, or at least push the other courts behind the scenes to do the right thing. But anyway, you could get some justice in the federal courts if you can navigate yourself through that process. Now, it really isn't that difficult, to get involved in the courts and write papers and things. It's just have to spend your time to work on the knowledge that you need. It starts with taking the courses. It took me a long time to figure a lot of things out. It took me a long time hit and miss, trying this and trying that, discovering what works and what doesn't work. And eventually, to some degree, I figured a lot of it out. So I went to the School of Hard Knocks. But with that, we are offering our experience through those things in our courses, in our paperwork that we write, and we offer it for people to take our paperwork and, use it. You can use pieces of our paperwork. You can use our memorandums. You can see the process that we run through and the different procedures and the different cases that we filed. All that is a lesson, a way to learn. But once it clicks, once you have enough information and you're spending the time in looking at these to kind of picking up the lingo, the language, picking up the process and seeing how things are working, and things start to click, and all of a sudden, you'll have your Helen Keller moment and it all clicks. But you have to put your time into it. People need to learn to be able to help themselves. We'll help you if you want, but you should be educated. As a matter of fact, anybody that we are helping, we require that they take our course. If they're not signed up to take our course and they're not taking our course, we're not interested in helping them, because they have to help themselves, And that's the problem, is Americans have been taught to look for others to do their work. We have a legal situation. We're taught to go see an ABA lawyer, American Bar Association lawyer. If you have realize that you need to have a relationship with God, people go find a rabbi or a priest or something, or a minister. All these things, you should be doing this yourself. You should go directly to God, have your relationship with God. You should go directly into courts and get your justice. You should know how justice works. And that's one of the things we want to do. We're going to be writing textbooks for schools, going all over, starting in the very beginning, first grade, all the way up until high school, and really teach our children, what their heritage is. And by the time children come out of school, they should have no problem being able to walk into a courtroom, writing a paper, and articulate themselves, because it really isn't that difficult. But that should become part of our education, to be able to represent yourself, to be able to go and take care of your own business. Now, you can hire counsel to assist you, but nobody knows your case better than you do. And I do know that a lot of lawyers will tell you, never represent yourself, this, that. That's all BS. No, nobody knows your case better than you do. If it's a criminal case and you're guilty, well, maybe that advice might be wise. But other than that, you should be able to represent yourself. Nobody knows your case better than you do. It's that simple. And all you need to do is understand what your rights are, what the Constitution says, what their authority is, what due process is. Are you getting due process? Are you in a proper court? Are you directing that magistrate to do certain things that's necessary for you to win that case? And you'll know if you're winning if you're controlling the narrative. You'll know if you're winning if they're on the defensive and you're on the offensive. But if they got the narrative and you're on the defensive, you got a problem and you're going to lose. You're losing and you're going to lose. But anyway, it gets back to ignorance. The only solution to ignorance is an education. So those are the options. Start to get an education. If you want, we can help you a little bit. Some cases do work through, and at some point in time, they're going to have to deal with our cases. Education, again, back to that is the key. All right. Any other questions?
No, that was all the questions for tonight, John.
Okay. All right, I don't have a particular subject matter, so we're going to move forward over to Brent. I see Brent is here. Are you up on your mic there, Brent? Gerard, are you here? I saw him come in. He's muted.
Can you hear me?
We can hear you, but you got a little fuzz in the background. What's going on?
You know, like, my mic has a static set.
A lot of static.
Yeah.
Can that be fixed by rebooting or putting you got another mic to plug in, or what's the problem? You know?
Well, my mic. Oh, this is my spare.
What?
I'll have to work on it.
All right. When you get it going, I'll pass things over to you. Because right now, I can barely understand you.
Okay.
All right. But when you get things fixed, let me know. Meanwhile, we're going to go over to Brent. Brent, are you unmuted yet? Not yet. Brent? Calling Brent. All right, I guess he must have stepped away from his computer. We'll try to give him a call in a short while. Meanwhile, I guess we'll pick up some questions. We'll take our first caller. Let's see. Looks like Audrey. Is that it? Audrey, you got the mic. Go right ahead. Audrey, you've been unmuted. Go right ahead. You got the mic. Audrey? Is that right? That is Audrey, right?
Hi, John. Sorry. I have the case that that Jan and you just went over in family court. So.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, that was my case in family court, and I am taking your courses. I'm halfway done through with the government by consent, and the
Well, you have the civics course, the militia course, and the government by consent course.
Yeah, I'm halfway through civics and halfway through government by consent, and I am, you know, working on understanding this stuff, and maybe I'm just thinking it's more complicated than it is. I mean, I understand my rights, and I had planned as my plan B, and I'm just wondering the proper lingo to use to remove my lawyer in a last-ditch effort and to establish jurisdiction.
Oh, that's real easy. That's real easy. Use the words, you're fired.
Okay.
I'm serious. Hey, look, if they deny you the ability to represent yourself, okay, which, you know, on the one hand, you kind of need a lawyer in those courts, but on the other hand, you're not going to do well with lawyers anyway. They yield to everything. Look at what it's got you so far, you know? So you're better off taking the chance of representing yourself. And I would get out of that court. I would move that court into federal court for cause. I mean, we can try to help you with an amicus curiae on your behalf into that court, and you can do a joinder if you want, and we can pull the case into our court. Now, they kind of ignore it because they think common law is passe, it's not real, it's not what we are, we're civil law, we're under civil law, okay? That's what they've decided. They've decided for the people, and the people were supposed to be under law, that's what our Constitution says. But these people decided to put us under civil law. And they got away with it. Why? Because we're ignorant to the truth. We're ignorant to our founding documents. We're ignorant to our heritage. We're ignorant to all those things. And you got to keep the slave ignorant, you know? So that's our problem. Good.
But as far as paperwork goes, I wouldn't need to have, I mean, where my paperwork's been filed in the common law in the civil court, the order to show cause and the modification of the decree. Now, if I show up and I've got 12 peers with me and it's not moving forward, my lawyer's on the defense because his lawyer's just a slimy big showman, and I step in, fire my attorney, I step in, represent myself, I've got a jury of my peers, is there anything I would need to file?
First of all, that socialist sitting up on the bench there is not going to let you do anything. there's certainly, you know, you're looking to potentially get a jury. They're not going to allow that either. And they're going, unless you understand and know what to do, and, you know, you got to do something. Let me tell you, it took us a long time to figure this out, that you got to do something that's extraordinary. You got to do something that nobody else is doing. You got to figure it out. So what are we going to do? We used to go to court, and we'd bring all this stuff up, and they'd send us back, come back in the next month and the next. Literally for a year, you'd be going to court. They're trying to get jurisdiction over. We're making an argument, and we're going through this and that. And eventually they win, or they wear you out, and they win. Because when they feel comfortable enough, they just do what they're evil, and that's that. And they move on, and nobody knows what to do, and you're scratching your head. You don't know where to go. You're making complaints. Nobody listens to you. And you just get depressed and defeated.
Right.
Well, look it. You know, you got to move the court. You tell the judge he needs to leave the room because he's not representing justice at all. You're not getting due process in that court. That's a fact. And I don't care what family court. I know that for sure. You'll not get any justice in any of those courts. There is no common law there. You'll never get it because you got all these lawyers. Okay, just tearing your family apart. Every child gets a lawyer. Both parents get a lawyer. If you can't afford one, they give it to you because they want a lawyer. And the whole thing is, it's RICO. It's all about money because they're making big dollars on this. The lawyers are making money. The courts are making money. Pockets are being lined. And that's what it's all about, all about money. And so you're getting beat up. So I've learned, I go to court once. That's all I do, one time. If I have to deal with a court, I go to court once. I let it know what's going to be done, and I have in my back pocket, I'll be going to court soon on a traffic thing. I'm just not paying no more. I'm done with traffic. And so I'm going to take it to the hills, take it into the federal court. And I will have in my back pocket when I walk into that court the removal of the case from there into a federal court. Unless they back off and realize that they need to back off me and just dismiss the case and leave me alone forever. But if they don't, I'm going to serve the papers right there in the court. And the next time, if we see anybody, it will be in the federal court. Now, of course, they'll pull a hearing because whenever you move into a federal court, automatically a hearing is pulled in. I don't know how it would work too much trying to get these lower court people in because they don't understand how federal courts work. I mean, I've been in court against different individuals in the federal courts, and they know far less than I do on how things work. And the judge beat them up pretty bad, these people, because they're coming in and they should know, these lawyers that are working, but they're used to state cases, and they don't know how the federal system works. But in any event, you got to move, you got to do something about it. You got to move it into the next court. You can move it into the Supreme Court and start there. And then from there, you're probably not going to get justice there either because more often than not, a lot of these counties, you're in a family court and there's the county court and there's the state court. And sometimes these judges, work all three courts, Like right. I know a judge that's mostly on the county cases, but sometimes he'll sit on a state case in the state court. So they mix they're all connected. But you could try that process and then move into the federal, or you can work ask us to do a joinder for you. We don't want to get involved between you and your husband, but we will get involved with the fact that they're denying your right to be a parent. Your children need a mother just like they need a father, and any court that is not looking for the benefit of the child, understanding that major point, is not a court of justice at all. Because they're not doing anything good for the family or anybody, But right. They need as much a mother as they do a father, and that's their battle, going after the judge. Particularly, we've got to win that part of the case. And,
hey, John?
Yeah. Yeah, you sound a lot better.
Yeah, I don't know what I did, but I just won't move anything. Listen, we did have a victory in family court because we moved it, and I think we only moved it into the Supreme Court I don't think we went to the federal court that time, but they got so scared.
Yeah, they backed off.
Everything got settled right after that. They didn't want it, because in the family court, they have a lot of leeway to play with you. When they have to go into the regular court, you know, and they got to be careful that they're not violating you, they don't want to go in there. Even the family court lawyers don't. But that case ended that day because they, all of a sudden, they got together and they reconciliated, and I think that's because we moved that case out of the family court for, because they were denying due process on the other right. side, you know.
Well, that's so, what she's got to do. She's got to get out of that court. That court's not giving her justice.
I'm telling you, that could be your victory by making the motion to move it out of the court for cause. And I think they're really scared about going into federal court. Like you said before, even if you move it into the Supreme Court, because you can take it to the federal court later, you get another shot at it. You know what I mean? And
yeah, yeah. That, let me ask you a question, Gerard. Are you using a headset mic or?
No, I'm not. My headset's dead and I'm charging it, so I'm on a regular stupid single wire mic.
And what's it laying on your
I'm holding it between my fat thumb and my forefinger.
Oh, you don't have a clip or anything?
Why is it you're getting is it moving around too much or
well
what?
There's two things I think. Number one, you're over modulating just a little bit. If you can get in and lower your mic level a little bit, that'd be good. And the other thing that could be causing over-modulating is that it's a little too close to your mouth. Back it off another couple inches and see how it goes.
All right. Well, I'll switch my headphones in a few minutes, but I'll yeah, I was close to my mouth with the mic. That's true.
All right. Anyway, let me know when you're ready. You think you're ready? Because I see Brent's here now. He's
I'm ready, and my headphones will be ready. But yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna introduce Brent, and then after he's finished, then you take the controls. I might walk away for 20 minutes or so, and I'll be back. But
all right.
But let me. I'm gonna sit and listen to hear what Brent's gonna be talking about tonight a little bit. Okay. Brent, are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to move over to Brent Winter. Brent Winters. He's the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic?
This is Brent, Alan Winters, commonlawyer.com. And the words I speak are my own, and they may or may not be the words of the leadership of National Liberty Alliance, but as always, they're kind enough to allow me to come on, say a few words. Well, don't want to miss Gerard. Don't want to miss Gerard and Brent on Patriot Soapbox. We got it tied up in the guts of the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And you can see us. And you can listen to us. And Ollie has been coming on with Gerard. And you can...
Hey, excuse me, Brent.
Yeah.
And I realize I didn't finish with the last person on the mic. You just give me another minute, and then you can pick up where you're
talking. Okay, go ahead.
Audrey, did you have anything final else to say before we move back over to Brent?
Oh, no. Thank you guys so much. I'll keep working on it. I appreciate it.
Yeah, if you want us to do an amicus curiae, get a hold of Jim. And it's intake@nationallibertyalliance.org, and you could talk to him about these things and see if you want to do that or however you want to go forward. Okay, thanks.
I will do that. Thank you.
All right, Brent, back to you. Sorry to disturb you.
Well, that's fine. I just want people to have an opportunity to see the most stupendous and striking green screens I've ever seen in my life with Ollie. Ollie comes on, and you never know where he's going to be sitting, and it looks real. Makes me want to get some. But that's Tuesdays through Thursdays on Patriot Soapbox.
Now, I'm going to talk
laughing,
about
Brent. They are pretty spectacular. And they look real. I want to talk about the Take Care Clause of our United States Constitution, a clause that I don't know anybody has ever talked about or heard about. And the reason is, I don't think it's ever come up before. It's never been a problem. It's that clause of Article 2, Section 3, Clause 1, says that the president, remember Article 2 is about the executive branch. There are three branches, and it's about the executive branch. And the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. That means done. Fancy word just means to make sure they're enforced. Now, this take care clause is about being faithful, about the president being faithful. As an instance of this, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 2 says, it is required of stewards that a man be found faithful. That means trustworthy. To put it even tighter, it just means to be trusty, to be a trusty fellow. But this take care clause is in gross violation all over the United States of America as I speak, in a way it has never, ever been violated before. And now that doesn't mean with the President of the United States, but the principle is a common law principle. Remember, our Constitution is a brief of common law government. As Chief Justice Taft said, it's our common law of government in compact draft. Every word and every phrase is informed by our common law. It explains and defines. It explains nothing. Nothing. Why? Because it's a brief. And everything it talks about freights, every word, every phrase freights a massive amount of common law due process with it. And common law due process is part of who we are. It's not what we do. It's not a list of laws. It's a way of life. And it's not what we do as much as who we are. And because of who we are, we go about doing things a certain way. We follow a certain course called fair play. We insist upon a fair fight. We insist upon a fight. They don't even insist upon fights in other countries. This is unique to our common law. Unique? Yeah, it doesn't exist anywhere else in the world. I don't use that word flippantly. It's not a comparative. You know, it's not possible that something be more unique than something else. And if anybody ever sees the words more unique, you know that the writer doesn't know what he's talking about. Unique is unique. As a matter of fact, it's a term of legal art of common law, uniqueness. It's not comparative, not to be compared to anything else. It's in a class by itself. Well, I want to talk about this take care clause because 26 states sued the government of the United States. The case was called United States versus Texas, but it was all about things that were going on. It was the legal presence, and it said that aliens in the United States, no matter how they got here, could hold work permits, picture IDs, driver licenses, social security numbers, earned income tax credits, Medicaid, Medicare. They could have access to those things and an untold number of social welfare benefits. So some of the states sued the United States, and they cited the Take Care Clause of Article 2. Remember, the Take Care Clause says that the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Well, the Take Care Clause of Article 2 of our Constitution, Executive Power Article, that's Article 2, comprises only 9 words. It says that the President, here it is, shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. But an understanding of those 9 words requires an appreciation of their roots in common law. Indeed, they are deeply rooted in our common law. And like all other features of a United States Constitution, the Take Care Clause derives from a long struggle between Parliament, that's the legislative branch, and the Crown in England, that's the executive branch, over the extent of prerogative powers. Prerogative powers, that is, the executive's asserted powers, claiming he can make new laws, he can legislate. But our Constitution says that all legislative power is vested where? in a Congress of the United States. Well, King John, back in the days of Magna Carta, they called him John Lackland, King John, he was a major offender against this. He arbitrarily increased taxes on his own without consulting Parliament, abused the King's court, tried to sit as a judge. That's a violation of separation of powers, too. Mustered soldiers for military misadventures, foreign and domestic, and hanged innocent men on his command without trial. And all this came to a head in the year 1215 on the 15th of June, on a low plain, on an island, in the Thames River. T-H-A-M-E-S. They say Thames. I don't know why, but that's what they call it. That's that river that flows down there right by London into the English Channel. Well, on that low island, that old low island called Runny Mead, he was faced with armed insurrection. The landholders of England had raised an army against him, and they gave him a choice. Sign this piece of paper with his pen here, or we're going to slaughter you and your army. So he thought about it and agreed to sign. And he established while signing, by signing, now he could have chosen not to and went to war, but he chose to sign. He established the principle that the king, that is the executive power in America, the president of the United States, and the governors of the states, those are the executive powers, all of sovereign governments. Well, he signed it. And thus began, no, it didn't really begin, it was an ongoing struggle that had existed before, but it began in a deeper earnest between law, that is our common law, and royal prerogative. What is royal prerogative? Well, that's the power of a king or an emperor or a dictator to be a one-man show. That's what it is. We don't have that in America, not by law. We've had plenty of executives that have tried to exercise it, namely these, I don't know what else you could call them, but ding-a-lings, these ding-a-ling governors, telling people they had to wear diapers on their faces and be under house arrest in their own homes. This is a power. They claim to act, and they claim it's for the public good, of course, always, right? Always for the public good, but they don't have any law behind them. But it's called prerogative. That means what they get to do, and nobody can tell them or stop them from doing it. That's what it means. Now, one of the most dangerous prerogative powers in the past has been the proclamation power. The proclamation power, Henry VIII, he proclaimed that his royal proclamations had the force of law as though they were acts of Parliament. Well, that didn't work, and after his death, Parliament repealed legislation that he had pushed through Parliament saying he could legislate. That's contrary to our common law. The legislative power is separate from the judicial power and separate from the executive power, just as the executive power is separate from the legislative power and the judicial power, and just as the judicial power is separate and independent. By the way, each of those are independent one from the other. None of them trump the other. It's a perpetual, at common law government is a perpetual Mexican standoff. And I think we cited that movie from 1967, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, the last scene was a three-way gun battle around the center point where there was a rock, and the man that was left standing got to see what was written on the back of the rock. Well, in James I's view, that's James I of King James Bible fame, he says law does not restrain him, or kings, him especially, because he said my authority comes direct from God. It doesn't come through the people. Therefore, I'm accountable only to God, never to man or law. Listen, If the power of government is direct from God, that's true. Oh, yeah. As the Pope claims, his power is direct from God, so that's true. He's untouchable and his word is law. But that's a lie. It's not true. Not true at all. No, the power of those who claim dictatorial power of states, whether the Vatican or a country, that power comes according to God. It's delegated through men, according to the Word of God. Chief Justice Coke held that the king could not lawfully change any part of the common law nor create any offense by his proclamation. In other words, a crime. I declare that anyone who doesn't wear a mask or a diaper on his face is guilty of a misdemeanor. That's what governors are trying to do. Up in Canada, Trudeau is doing that. Those folk up there are beside themselves. There is no government in Canada now. They tell me, they write me, they text me, my friends up there, and say, except him. No legislative power, no judicial power. Well, Edward Coke, by the way, Edward Coke quoted more than any other man by those who framed our founding documents. No, they didn't quote the Greeks and the Romans except for bad examples. They quoted Edward Coke because Edward Coke wrote the definitive commentary on Magna Carta. He was a defender of the common law. He bucked Henry VIII at the risk of his neck, spent time in the Tower for it, almost got executed, came out, ran for Parliament, gave Henry VIII more fits there. Henry VIII was like King James I. They were maniacs to be God in their own countries. Well, Coke concluded this, I'm quoting, "The law of England is divided into three parts." Here it is, listen to this. This is our law. Two. It's inherited from England, divided into three parts. Listen to this. Common law, statute law, and custom. Common law, statute law, and custom. And he said, but the king's proclamation is none of these. It's not common law, it's not legislation, it's not statute law, and it's not customary either. Well, we could say the same thing right now, today. We need to be saying the same thing about these goofy governors telling people they have to wear diapers on their faces. We need to stress the stupidity and childishness of their commands and not obey such foolishness. Because to do so is to provide precedent. If it's not a law, and you don't believe it's a law, you have a duty. Some things we have a duty not to obey. Some things that may be stupid, we have a duty to obey. But when they say you can't go to church, we have a duty to disobey. Why? Because the Bible is forthright, point blank, unambiguous. Hebrews 10:25, forsake not the assembling of yourselves together. Well, Coke also reiterated the point in the case of non abstente. Non abstente, which means the dispensing power. And Edward Coke, Terry just Skyped and said Magna Carta was signed. Good point, Terry. Magna Carta was signed 805 years ago today. Today. Well, that's worth noting and remembering the 15th of June. Edward Coke observed that the king does have some prerogative powers, for example, and the President of the United States has these prerogative powers too. It's right in the Constitution. Number one, the power of pardon. The power of pardon independent of anything any court says, otherwise any jury even. That's a powerful power. Well, he has the power of pardon, or as English lawyers said way back then, not abstente. He can pardon the lawful conviction of a jury. But Coke insisted that the king's power could never be used to annul a statute. Never to be used to annul a statute. Now, if the king attempted to dispense with a statute, said Coke, the king's effort would be void, he said, for an act of parliament binds the king. Now, I don't think Coke's right here. I don't think an act of Congress, for instance, binds any president, absolutely. Why don't I think that? Because that's not common law doctrine. Every person in the government, the president, every congressman, every senator, every Supreme Court justice, every judge, every officer of state government, right down to the lowly county prosecutor, every one of them takes an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States against enemies within and without, foreign and domestic. Well, that means if the legislature says something that's unconstitutional, and you're the governor, or you're the president, or you're the county prosecutor, or you're the sheriff, that you have a duty, not an option, a duty to disobey the orders that you think are unlawful. You better be sure. Now, what about stupid laws? Well, stupid laws are another matter. If they don't, if obeying them doesn't require a person by that very obedience to disobey God, go ahead and do them. But we do have a duty. And presidents are not bound utterly by every piece of legislation. Presidents are only bound, and governors are only bound by the state legislature, of laws that are constitutional. And they must make that decision individually. Like Andy Jackson said, when I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, I did not take an oath to support and defend it as some other person understands it, such as a Supreme Court justice or a legislator. I took an oath to support and defend it as I understand it. How could it be any other way? So I think Koch's wrong on that point, not to disparage him, though, very much. He's important in our history of our common law to understand its fundamentals. Now, back in 1952, Youngstown Sheet and Tube seizure case, where President Truman seized the steel mills of the United States, claiming a national emergency. That's the way it always is, all right? Oh, we got to do this to save the country or something. Well, we were in Korea at the time, and the unions decided to go on strike, the steel mills. So he was going to go in and grab them up. Supreme Court said, no, you can't do that, Harry. You're an all right fellow otherwise, but you're making a mistake here. You can't do that. And the Supreme Court held that the president cannot make law. That's tantamount to making law. That's the exclusive job of Congress. If you don't like it, you can disobey it, but you can't annul it. If you think it's unconstitutional, maybe, you can ignore it even. And all presidents since the beginning of our country have ignored the statutes of Congress to varying degrees. Every one of them. Well, executive orders. Let me mention this. Now, people talk about executive orders being law. Well, not necessarily is that true. I think we're stretching that too much. Every time the president or a governor orders those under his authority to do something, that's an executive order. Is there something wrong with that? Answer, no. Absolutely not. That's his job. That's his job. Executive orders are him ordering employees of government, not him ordering you. I think we're not fully appreciating what an executive order is. When the President of the United States tells the Joint Chiefs of Staff to ensure that our military armed forces are always ready, ever ready, that's an executive order. Do we want to end executive orders? I hear people say things like that. That's silly, of course. No, we don't want to end executive orders. We do want him to deliver executive orders to the bureaucrats that work under him and the military officers that work under him that are constitutional. Well, some of his executive orders, remember that Islamic Arab we had in the White House. I don't want to say he's president because he wasn't. He couldn't have been. He wasn't a natural-born citizen. He wasn't born in the United States. But more than that, the second prong of that test is both of his parents would have had to have been citizens of the United States at the time of his birth, and they weren't. One of them was, but the other one wasn't. So he wasn't really president, but remember when he said, well, if Congress is not going to pass legislation I want them to pass, I've got a pen and I've got a telephone number here I can call to these different bureaucracies and tell them what to do. What he was saying was, I can pick up the phone and I can order those in the employment of government under my authority in the executive branch, all of the bureaucracies, to do certain things. To enforce things, my interpretation of the law. Now, this is touchy business. Every time a police officer stops you, he's already played the part of a judge. He's decided and a judge that you were speeding, or that he should only stop you in such cases, or that you ran a stop sign. Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but he's made a decision. The executive branch has to make initial decisions like that. And when the president or a governor says, in these cases, I want you to interpret the statute this way, and every time you see somebody stop at a stop sign for less than 5 seconds, I want you to give them a ticket for running a stop sign. Well, that's an unreasonable interpretation of the word stop at a stop sign in the statute. But that's the kinds of things that governors and presidents will order of their executive branch. What's that fellow's name that was such a socialist and a communist? Franklin Delano Roosevelt, when he was president. Kidnapping was the rage back then. And the Barker gang, led by Moll Barker, ordered the kidnap of a banker, or the kidnap of a banker's son. I think it was his son. Held him ransom for quite a bit of money. Well, this fellow, this banker, this bankster, happened to be a strong supporter of Franklin Roosevelt and given him a lot of money to run for president. So Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was president, he made an executive decision and decided that was number one priority, to capture or kill the Barker gang. Why? To satisfy his bankster buddy, that's why. And so everything else was dropped, and he ordered Hoover, the newly formed FBI, to go out and find these folks and kill them if you have to. And they did. They riddled them full of bullets in a house somewhere down in Oklahoma or someplace, just because they didn't like bankers. Now, did they commit a crime? Yes. But you see, the president gets to decide who lives and who dies as a practical matter in such situations. That's an executive decision to order the death of other people. Is that right? Well, I'd say that's pretty thin. There are other crimes committed. You know, they go after people that maybe didn't pay the taxes they wanted to pay, instead of going after the people in government that are treasonous. Yeah, that's what they're doing. Well, that's a decision of the executive branch. Well, there's that kind of power. It's being exercised all over America right now, throughout our history. I could talk about Charles II. He was the one they got rid of. James II, way back there. It plays out through history, a constant struggle. By the way, Roosevelt, more than any other president, violated this. He was the one that pushed through. Well, he forced the Supreme Court of the United States. Forced? No, they had a choice, but they didn't take it, oddly. Justice Jackson flipped. They called him the switch in time that saved nine. The switch in time that saved nine. Saved nine what? Well, saved nine Supreme Court justices, because Roosevelt said he was going to appoint up to 14 justices so he could get enough to have the majority he wanted on the Supreme Court to support his New Deal communist and socialist programs. And it was through all that the presidents of the United States and the governors of the states gained the power to legislate. That's what we're talking about here. Well, how do they do it now? They do it through regulations. Regulations are executive orders. Now, that's the abuse. There is a proper use of executive orders, but regulations are executive branch bureaucratic, the bureaucracy's interpretation of the statutes that Congress passes. And our courts now say and this is the court's fault, they don't have to say this, but now it's the practical way things happen now in America. The courts say that if you don't like our regulations, the burden's on you to show that they're unconstitutional and not the other way around. Before Roosevelt, the burden was on the government to show that they are constitutional if you took them to court. This is how things have flipped in America. An executive power has become all-important and all-powerful. Is it possible to get the governors and the presidents to back off from executive power? Well, they're not going to do it. No way. No, they want the executive power that they have to fight the other side, whoever they may be, politically. But all in all, it's bad business in all cases. Jesus Christ said of the bureaucrats of his day, called the Pharisees, or the Pharisees, I call them the Pharisees, he said, you pile rules, that is regulations, upon the people. You pile them on to where they can't move, but you yourselves won't raise one little finger to do any of those regulations. It becomes overwhelming. And then try to hold everybody else to it, but the people that promulgate the regulations don't do it. Now, let's see, we'll finish up here. Justice John Powell. Well, I'll go on. Let's see, the U.S. Constitution incorporates British rejection of what's called the dispensing powers under the Take Care Clause. In other words, the power to legislate. As simple as this is, I think it's almost simple, it's dumb that we have to talk about such things, but we do, because men will press and press and press if they're presidents and governors. They'll gain more and more power, and through regulation now they have the power to, as a practical matter, to legislate, to pass law. And that's what you're seeing today with this coronavirus. You're seeing all of that gone to seed, telling us by executive decree from governors, not the president. I haven't heard Trump say much really about it. If he has, it hasn't had any teeth. But these governors have been telling us, or have been saying to us, that what they say is law. And it isn't. What are we going to do about it? Back to you, Gerard. Thank you for the time.
Okay, thank you, Brent. Well, a couple of those governors had losses in courts recently.
Yes.
And that's a good thing.
Yep. I'm refreshed and reinvigorated by some of these judges in these little county courts and on up.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know the one in Oregon. They took 10 powers away. I'm assuming that was the county court, and then that was upheld under appeal, I think. I don't think they made it to the Supreme Court, either one of them, but doesn't matter, I don't think. Kind of sets a precedent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that judge in, I think it was Illinois, wrote a very good, you know, dicta on that. His commentary was pretty good. Sounded like one of the judges of our forefathers when he was laying out how ridiculous this law was under the COVID, you know, these executive orders, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's encouraging. So, you know, it looks like maybe there'll be a turnaround, people getting fed up finally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like our forefathers said, people will put up with an awful lot of abuse until they get to a certain point that they can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that point's approaching, so...
Yeah,
we got to keep pushing.
Yes.
So thank you for that anyway.
My pleasure. Yeah.
Yep. So I'm going to open up Michael, looks like from Colorado. Go ahead, Michael. You've been unmuted.
Oh, yes. Michael from Colorado. I have a probate case. It is 2009 PR7. It just closed like a year ago on the district court. I was wondering if we could bring a claim against this judge, and it's the entire respondents versus me, including two attorneys I hired. The first attorney is Raymond Valdez. The respondent's attorney, Zerby, subpoenas him and testifies against me to enforce a stipulation. I got the documents. It seems unreal, but it is real. June the 9th, 2011, they all conspired through the case out of the jurisdiction to work in the county 150 miles north from here. And on that day, they wanted my signature on a blank piece of paper, which they got. Jan has the stipulation in his hands now. Why would I pay $11,000 for a deficit of $102,861, the Medicaid lien the state of Colorado put on my mother's estate? I didn't pay him nothing. I didn't pay him nothing. I filed my waiver to the Colorado Estate Recovery Program in July 2011. It was granted to me October 17th, 2011. The lien was dropped. And Patty Swift and the respondents remove me from the case totally. I got nothing. You have to see these documents. Here's a order of motion in limine from my second attorney, Eric Tweezel. If you go to page 2, paragraph 6, there's this man that was in the Huerfano County acting as Judge Goldberger. He is telling Eric Tweezel how to represent me. It is necessary to limit my testimony. Let me get here. It's in conversation with the settlement judge concerning the circumstances surrounding the execution of the stipulation, the settlement judge confirmed to understand counsel Michael Giron that if he is to testify, his testimony will be necessary to be limited to the fact that he drafted the stipulation and the party signed it. All of that is false. It is false. I did not draft the stipulation. I did not agree to it. It was all a conspiracy to get my signature on this piece of paper, and they got it, and it became the stipulation. It is so unconstitutional. Patty Swift enforced it, and she went against public policy. Public policy, courts must avoid making decisions that are interactively legislative, because it is not up to the court to make or waive policy. And then she went encroachment in general, making remedies and for the stipulation for the General Assembly didn't go there. It's crazy. I think we have something here huge, my friends. If you want to help me, I'd like to donate most of it to the NLA. We got two counties. We got three or four attorneys and all my siblings. And I got the documentation proving. Are you there, Jan?
Jan? Yeah, I had a hard time following everything, but it sounds to me like, you know, you had a lot of stuff going on back and forth. But so what was the end result? They ruled against you?
The end result, I didn't pay him $11,000. And I filed my waiver. The waiver is in the Colorado a birth certificate proving that Flora Heron was my mother, not her son. A letter from my doctor is to why I'm disabled, and a letter from the feds of how much money I get monthly. And I forwarded it to them, and with that, they dropped the $102,000 Medicaid lien on my behalf.
Oh, it was a Medicaid lien against
The
you.
Medicaid,
And they were trying to collect from what? From your mother or somebody that got the services? I didn't kind of catch that.
Yes. This law came into effect July 1st, 1992. It's called the Medicaid Reimbursement Act. If the state wasn't in a joint tenancy, this and the other, then when the person dies, they could throw a lien on the property to reimburse themselves.
When I'm getting real involved in all the facts, I think you've got two paths that you can take, because they did a lot of stuff back and forth. You know, it sounds to me like they did probably violate your due process rights and some of that, and that's a case that can be brought up to the federal court. Or you could do a tort against them. You know, you'd probably have to get an attorney if you don't know how to move through the courts. But you could attack them, you know, directly with a countersuit and for damages for what they did. As long as you got all the evidence, you know.
I do.
I don't know if you could do that yourself or you'd have to have an attorney. I hate to tell people to get attorneys, but you need an attorney if you're going to go into court and you don't know the procedures and the discovery. It can get quite involved. So, but you know, if you got all the documentation, it should be a no-brainer, you know. I mean, other than that, I don't know, you know. I mean, we don't normally go after people as far as just going after people. You know, we're more like going after government officials when they're frauding or taking kids away and stuff like that, where we maybe do a habeas corpus to get them out and things like that. But you kind of, you know, it looks to me like they weaponized the court against you, which, you know, I mean, and look, you can also do complaints, you know, judicial complaints through the proper channels to complain about that judge for whatever that gets you. I mean, I've been told that even these judges down here, if they get enough complaints on them, they don't like that. They'll discipline a judge if he's really bad, and what happens is, look, they like everything to run smooth. They want to collect their money, and they want to do it in a certain fashion that they're not completely beating everybody up. So if you have a real abusive judge, sometimes they'll discipline him if they get enough people complaining, you know. But
I've done that, it's no luck. I went to the Colorado Supreme Court, judicial disciplinary, William Campbell.
Uh-huh.
All he'd done was protect Patty Swift. I have his letters here. To the fact that this judge allows my attorney to testify against me. And then when I was up there as a witness, I could only answer as to yes or no.
Yeah, I don't know. Having your attorney testify against you, how do you do that? I mean, maybe Brent can speak on that. They're not, supposed to do that. I mean, he should lose his license, I would think. You know?
They did. I got Miranda Zerbe's subpoena. He subpoenaed him December 15th, 2012.
The only way I could imagine that a judge should be able to get an attorney to testify against you is if you were committing a crime and the attorney knew about it or saw it. I mean, as far as him testifying against you for something that you hired him to defend you on in court, that should never happen, if I'm understanding it right.
I mean,
that alone should be.
I agree. And you got the transcript that said it happened, probably.
Yes.
Because it does happen.
I got the transcript.
Yeah, it does happen. Here's what has to happen in those cases. If the lawyer is, the judge says, get on the witness stand, and the lawyer has a duty to say no. What is spoken between me and my client is between me and my client. What could happen to your lawyer? He could take the hit for you. He could go to jail. Until
what happened here, if I may...
Go ahead.
What they were trying to hide what they did in June 11th, getting my signature on a blank piece of paper. That's why they went to all this extent of my lawyer...
Well, did your lawyer get on the witness stand and testify?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he did, because he didn't want to go to jail. And that going to jail for not for disobeying the judge in such a case is called non-criminal contempt. In other words, you say the lawyer has a duty. He has a duty to his client to say no. I've seen lawyers do that. I've seen a lot of funny things. But judges don't always follow the law. They have a whole lot of power. They can throw a fellow in jail for not testifying. That doesn't make it right. It's not criminal contempt as long as the lawyer doesn't tell him off or mouth off to him, or as long as he respectfully says, what's between my client and I is between us. And that's the law, Judge. I respectfully refuse to get on the witness stand. And if he goes to jail, the judge will say, I'm going to put the jailhouse key in your pocket. This is the way non-criminal contempt works. I'm going to put the jailhouse key in your pocket, Mr. Lawyer, or whoever he's putting in. And whenever you want to get out of jail, just send word to me by the bailiff or somebody that you're willing to do to follow my orders and get on the witness stand. Now, the lawyer has two choices. He can stay there and sit and cool his heels for about 6 months, and then they may let him out. Traditionally, there isn't a solid rule on this in most places, even in the federal courts. But the traditional custom is no more than 6 months, but possibly up to 18. There was one case back... Pardon?
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
There was one case back in 2002 or 2000 or 1999. It was called something media versus something. I can't remember. But a fellow was... put in jail for non-criminal contempt because he had established a trust in the Cook Islands. And the trustee in the Cook Islands, of course, once you do that, you turn the title of your property over to the trustee. Title, that's ownership. That's what a trust is. It's not an entity, it's an arrangement. They turned it over to the trustee, and the law in the Cook Islands says that once that happens, that the trustee is not subject to the orders of any judge in the United States or any place else. So the trustee in that case applied to the courts for instructions, because once a trustee applies to the courts for instructions and he follows the instructions of the court that has jurisdiction over him, then he can't be held in contempt. And so he did that. But so the judge in America, who was a federal judge in California, said, I can't get a hold of the trustee, so Mr. Beneficiary, I'm going to throw you in jail until things change. Now that's unlawful. That's utterly unlawful. The judge threw him in jail, and he said this, I'm going to put you in jail. The jailhouse key is in your pocket. Of course, he had no control over what the trustee did in the Cook Islands. The jailhouse key is in your pocket, and I'm putting you in jail indefinitely. These are the key words, indefinitely, but not forever. Whatever
and
that means.
Then another
that means
thing,
for a long time. Well, did the attorney go? The attorney testify, and did he tell everything you didn't want him to tell?
They filed a motion, in limine. It's a corrupted corrupt law. Anything flies except the truth. And then another thing, she allowed two of my brothers, Armando and Gilbert, to play the role of petitioner and respondent.
Yeah. When you go to court, when you go to court, and today more than ever, but it's always been this way to varying degrees, it ain't nothing but a knock-down, drag-out fight. And don't you ever forget it. And you avoid going to court at all costs. I realize sometimes you can't avoid it. But I say this for the benefit of everybody. Avoid going to court if you can. Because it's down, it's dirty, it's ugly. It's mean. It is a scratching, kicking, biting, gouging fight. And you may or may not come out without injuries, but you probably will. Go ahead, Gerd.
I just say put a bunch of liens on the judge. They put you in jail for that anyway.
Yeah,
so if I'm sitting in jail, I'll just file liens on his property. How's that?
What would it take to indict this judge? That ain't the only case. I have another case ending in the death of my son, grandson Devani.
I don't know if he'll indict them. I think you can sue him personally, though, can he, Brent?
He steps outside the scope of his judicial role. But as long as he's on the bench, wearing a black robe, pretty much he's in the within the scope of his judicial role, no matter how crazy he is. And I think I told this story. This really happened not too many years ago.
I remember that story.
The story. Well, for the benefit of those that maybe didn't hear it, I'll try to tell it quickly. It was about a judge in Chicago, and he was a slumlord, and he'd evicting people that were not paying rent, and he evicted this one fella, and he went down to look at his slums one night, and then he found this fella squatting, had a sleeping bag, sleeping in the slum. He got so mad, he pulled out his pistol. It was a bad neighborhood. Now, this is in Chicago, where pistols aren't allowed. I guess judges think the law, or didn't used to be. Pulled out his pistol, got him down, put his pistol, cocked it, I shouldn't say cocked it, had it loaded, put it to this fella's head, held him on the floor, and held court on the spot. He had authority to do that, to hold court. But he held the gun to his head and ruled, asked him if he had anything to say, and ruled that he was breaking the judge's order and didn't get out, and so held the verdict against him right there. It was all crazy. But he was within his judicial role. Now, I'm talking about what the Seventh Federal Circuit said in this case. They said this man, we're not going to consider his use of a firearm, brandishing a firearm in an unlawful manner, carrying a firearm in a place that the law says you can't even have one. But they said no matter how crazy a judge is, as long as he is acting as a judge, and say even if it's he's saying things that are unlawful, he's not stepped outside the scope of his judicial role. Now, there was another case I read at that time when I had that problem because I went after a judge who stepped outside. He joined the prosecution team and in federal court, and so I said, can I go after him? Well, I did find one case where a judge fired his assistant, one of his secretaries, one of his legal assistants, and the question in that case was, could she sue him? Was that something that was outside the scope of his judicial role to fire somebody that worked for him in his office? And the court said, yeah, now that was outside the scope of his judicial role, so if he acted in this discriminatory manner against this lesbian that was working for him, well then, yeah, she can sue him. You see, it all depends upon the policies of government, whether or not they're going to let you sue a judge. What does it mean to step outside of your judicial role? Clearly, to sum up, again, if you got on a black robe and you're sitting on the bench, it doesn't make any difference what you say or what you do. There was a fellow down in Oklahoma who ended up in jail in the end for quite a long time, a judge, who was, I'm debating whether or not I want to say what he was doing while he was sitting on the bench. He did this persistently on the bench. He had all sorts of, well, he was doing it while he was sitting on the bench, and he was doing it under the bench. Persistently. Finally, he got caught. And the question was, had he stepped outside his judicial role? And in that case, he hadn't. But because he was so distracted while he was doing it, and negligent in murder cases and such things, they finally got him off the bench. But they couldn't do it by saying he has stepped outside of his judicial role. There was another case I'd read at that time. Tom Jefferson went after a federal judge for cussing on the bench while drunk in an admiralty case. And he went after him to impeach him. And the judge challenged Tom Jefferson to a duel. And Tom Jefferson didn't respond to the challenge and ended up getting him impeached. I think Congress impeached him and they got him off the bench. They used to do that kind of stuff. Judges on benches have problems across the board. A lot of them have go through a lot of wives. I don't know about the women going through husbands. Now that we've got men going through wives, we've got women on the bench like we've never had before, and that's changed the whole dynamic of everything. There's no sense trying to hide it, and it's not necessarily good. But judges have all sorts of personal problems. A lot of times they drink too much. I've seen that. And they used to impeach them for those things. Anymore, they just do like they do the preachers and the priests that molest children. They try to hide it and overlook it or transfer them someplace else. The impeachment needs to be, in America, impeachment of judges needs to be just the course of the way things work. Because that's the only way we're going to have courts that uphold the standard of Magna Carta, two-prong standard for judges on the bench. Number one, Magna Carta says they must know the law. Now, when it says law, that means that's short for common law. They must know the common law. Now, notice it does not say they must know about the common law. That's different. A lot of people know about the common law, but how many people know it? How many people have made it their handmaiden? No, have made themselves handmaiden to the law, have, as it were, married the law, as you would marry a woman. How many men have done that, that are on the bench? Well, some may have. I shouldn't say that. I've read some judges that, and known about them and read about their lives, that had made that their life. And so they didn't just know the law, they knew about the law. Number two, the second requirement is that they mean to observe it well. They must know it like you'd know your wife. How do you know your wife? Well, you know her pretty intimately after they close the doors, in a way nobody else knows her. That's the way you're supposed to know the law. And every man that knows the law that way, every judge that is supposed to know the law that way, he knows the law in a way no other man knows the law. Why? Because he knows it from his perspective. It's like, well, he knows it from his perspective. Like Andy Jackson said, when I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, I took an oath to support and defend it as I understand it. And that's the way you should be too. You should make it yours. You should understand our fundamental principles of common law, which are due process. That's what it is. You should understand those well as you understand it, as you bring your conscience and your understanding and your background and your experiences and your learning to the law. That's the way you will understand it. And by the way, that's the only way you will ever understand the Bible either. You'll understand it the way you understand it. Now, there are parameters. There are things it does not say, no matter how you cut it. That goes for all writings of legal significance. But still, it has to come to your experience in every case, or you don't know it. But to mean to observe it well, I know men that write books about the Bible that know more than I'll ever... They've forgotten more than I'll ever know. They don't mean to observe any of it well. No, it's just a living. They're professors at some Ivy League school at the seminary, like Harvard. They know a lot. But it means nothing to them. They don't mean to observe it well. Same thing is true of judges. Oh, you're a smart man, ever learning, says Paul the Apostle, but never able to come to a knowledge of the truth. Why? Because you don't mean to observe it well. And if a judge does not know the law and mean to observe it well, both of those, he should be impeached. You say, well, that's not what the Constitution of the United States says. It says crimes and misdemeanors. Well, it talks about behavior. High crimes, misdemeanors, it includes everything. What can you impeach a judge for in America? This is at the state level and the federal level. You impeach them for whatever Congress wants to impeach them for, and it should be in the category of bad behavior. Back to your situation, when it's such a knockdown, drag-out, blood and guts fight like you're apparently experiencing, what can you do? Here's what you do. You get in there and mix it up. Mix it up wisely in a way that you won't go to jail. But you got to mix it up if you're going to fight. You're there, and there's no getting out of it. There's safety in such a situation. The only safety you'll experience is in battle. You're in the battle, and you just sit there, and you're going to get hurt. Go ahead.
I have a question.
You know, I'd like to make a comment on that, too, myself. I was thinking as you were talking, and I'm in agreement with this idea of impeachment, because it is the legislator's job to deal with a problem judge that is in bad behavior. And it is written in the Constitution. It's written in the sense that in Article 3, Section 2, Article 3, Section 1, that the judges get to hold their office during good behavior. So if they're in bad behavior, they need to be corrected. They need to, and depending on how bad the behavior is, you know, maybe they can be corrected and move on. But if not, then they need to be removed. And it is the job of the legislators. And I want to tell you, we're in extraordinary times. If the legislators are too inept and cannot do their job, because it does seem that they cannot do it, then we the people have to take control. We have the power. We have the authority. We have the authority to change the servants, to move, to remove them from office and look for other individuals to take their place. And we can do that. And it's extraordinary, but nevertheless, we can do that, and we can read about that power and authority in the Declaration of Independence to restructure. And so we can remove them through indictment. Now, the best way to remove a judge if government is not paying attention or doing their duty, requires the people who are consenting. And that's the problem. People are not consenting to their government. And that's why we need an education. That's why we need people to volunteer. That's why we need people to step up and take back this nation. Otherwise, maybe you just don't want it. But look, if we take back this nation and take back the authority of the people and take control of the political process through the committee man, it's only a phone call by the county chair, and it doesn't even have to be the county chair. But that's the most powerful seat in the county, is the county chair, to call the representatives involved, or at least the representative, and get together with other chairmen to call their representatives to say, what's going on here? Look what this judge is doing. You people have a duty and a responsibility to impeach or consider an impeachment for this judge for the actions that they're doing. And the Constitution says so. And it's your job to do the impeachment. And you see, we the people can do that very easily. If we control the political process, that is, that we become elected committeemen and take control of that entire process. People need to understand that political animals, all these people in power, all of them, okay, come with a bent knee to the committeeman because they owe their job to the committeeman. The committeeman could make them or break them, and they know that, and they're going to be obedient to that committeeman. Unfortunately, the committeeman process is controlled by the powers that be, their party bosses, and they control them to do evil. We need to take them back and control them to do good. So it's our fault, and it's our responsibility to take control of this. And until we get control of this, we can, we do, we are, and we will, and we are doing it right now. We are indicting these judges that are in bad behavior. They do not deserve to be on the bench because... apparently, Congress is not have the guts to do the motivation to do their duty. So Jefferson, I'm glad to hear that story about Jefferson. I mean, here you go right off the bat in the beginning of our nation, and Jefferson jumps right up and brings the correction right into place. It's already in the Constitution, and so we have to fix it. But again, if you know, only the people can save America. Got to get up and do something. Everybody, not just somebody or a few. Everybody needs to do something. Everybody. Did I say everybody?
So this committee, I'll have to get with Jan to get one started here.
What was that?
The committee deal. Do I need to get with Jan to get started here?
Yeah, you want to connect. What state are you in?
Colorado.
Okay, so you want to connect with your district leader in Colorado, that's District 4. Yeah, you can get a hold of Jan. Jan will give you the phone number, the name and the phone number of your district leader, and we'll see if they got other people involved. And you might want to take control of this on a state level, but working on your county level to assist to get more people involved. And at some point, you can give that state position up. You can hold the state coordinator as well as holding a county organizer at the same time, you know, because it's all about organizing. So, and if it's too much, you can always pass it to someone else. But yeah, we will train you on how to get things started. You know, everything starts with a small group. All you got to do is get one other person to work with, or get to sit down for coffee occasionally, start making plans and finding other people. Once you get about six people, that's when you're ready to really form something in the county that you're going to now start to have meetings, and then you invite the people, maybe a lot of liberty groups. You'll find lots of liberty groups all over the nation. You start inviting people from liberty groups and let them know that we've got a way to give them power to take back this nation, to be the consensus of our government, and bring them to National Liberty Alliance, get them educated, get them involved. Let's get the militia going, the committeemen going, the administrators for the judicial process going. Let's save this nation. So, yeah, Get okay, going. Yes. Get in touch with Jen, and he'll send you the right person. Jen.
I'll get with Jan tomorrow, and I'll get this started. I have one more question.
He should give you two contacts. You should get in hold of Jan, Francine, and then whoever the district leader, if there's a district leader in number four. I think there is a district leader in number four. And start working with them. And remember, this is more, you want to work together in your whole state. Although you're working on your county, you want to support others in other counties and work for them to be doing the same thing you're doing. We will train you and teach you how to go and address the sheriff. As a matter of fact, we have plans right up on our website. If you go up to our website on nationallibertyalliance.org, and you click on duties, there's people's duty. And the very first thing, when you highlight people's duty, don't click on people's duty, just highlight it. As soon as you highlight it, the very first box down, it says organizing your county. Start right there. Now, we're putting together a page where people will be able to go and find out who their district leaders are, but we haven't put that together yet. But Jan, Francine, if you're listening in, let's get that page up there. Even if we don't have the details on their job, let's get that page of district leaders up there so that people have someone to contact and to try to help them organize.
Hey, Michael.
Yes.
Is this a county judge that you're dealing with, or is he in the state?
No, it's a district judge. It's a female. Patty
Swift. You mean district, like district as far as the Supreme Court?
You have your county court, and then you have your district court. It's a state court.
Okay, because the higher they go, the harder they are to, it takes more influence for them. It's easy to get control of a county judge, especially if you're a committee man, but nevertheless, it can be done. But if they know that you're a mouthpiece and you got people following you, it makes a big difference. I was in politics, I think it was Jefferson said, those who refuse to get involved in politics are destined to be run by their inferiors who do, and that's true. Because if you know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody, sometimes all you got to do is whisper in the right ear, and even a judge like that, somebody will get a hold of
exactly.
him. And politically, you could control them. You really can, and it's almost easier sometimes than it is trying to fight them in open court, because somebody knows something about somebody, and maybe they'll say, "Hey, listen, I don't know what you're doing, but guess what?" And believe it or not, that's what makes the world go around here in America today. As shameful as it seems, although the committee man should have that political clout, because he's the guy that's carrying the petitions and he's talking to his fellow committee man, and that judge may not make it back into office if he doesn't tout the line. So
there's no doubt about it. If we take back the committee man process and we bring righteousness to the table, and we bring the proper rules for the committee men, which we have already written and people can add to them and so on, but we did resolutions and everything as an example for others also to use. But if you get that going, you come together, your purpose is to really have a government that's under the control of the people, that's doing just things and the right things. And I got to believe, you bring this to the other committeemen and say, "Hey, look what this judge is doing here. He's in bad behavior. These people are not doing their job over there as legislators. They're not going to impeach him. We have to do something. Let's do something. Let's get together and put this guy, straighten this guy out. Whatever it takes, either to bring him back into his proper role if it's not that bad a situation, or to remove him from the bench." Okay, and you can remove him from the bench through what's called a recall. The power of the committee man is the power to recall at any given time. You can remove anyone from office within 90 days through the power of recall. Okay, it's a 90-day process. And again, we also have, until we get to that, we have the grand jury that can indict and remove for that purpose because they're in bad behavior and they're breaking their oath, all right? So we need to do something, and those are the things we can do. But it's up to us to do it. If we don't do it, who's going to do it?
I have one question.
Thank you, John.
Left. one more question. I had sued him in federal court. It went all the way to the United States 10th Circuit. It was case 1-13-CV-1952-LTB. They kept putting me in jail, and the case went dismissed. Can I sue him again in federal court?
Look, the bottom line on these cases, in all cases, I don't know of anything that is not the same. They're running civil law in our courts. They are concealing common law courts. They are obstructing justice. And when you're before a judge, all of these judges, they're ruling under civil law. You can take them into federal court for cause because they're denying you due process. Due process is not civil law. Due process is a common law procedure and process, and is run by the people, not by any elected individual. You see, this is the things that people really need to get to understand and appreciate the dangers of. Well, look at what these people are doing in Congress. You think the judges are any different than them people? Not at all. Not at all. Jefferson spoke about them. They're no more righteous than any other man. They got the same problems anybody else does. And if the system is corrupt, most of the people will be corrupt, because that is the nature of man, to line their pockets or whatever it is that they're desiring to get, that they can get through all of their, you know, unjust actions. So, but you can move. But again, now in order to move to federal court for cause and to have this whole case closed down, to cease and desist, and because they violated your right of due process, and I'm sure many other rights, you can list them out, and you can get X amount of dollars in your wherefore clause. You can ask for X amount of dollars for each offense against your unalienable rights that you were damaged by, yes. And also all the people involved. If you're depending on the court, the prosecutor is involved. Look, this is a conspiracy, because you got a judge and a prosecutor, and unfortunately, most times, usually, your own lawyer, all working together, so you're going to lose.
It was a conspiracy to get my signature on that. It's now the stipulation that she enforced.
Yeah, so you got them all. You can take them all in, but again, you have to know how to do it. Have you been studying? Have you been taking the courses? Have you been reading our papers?
I'm gonna do your courses again. I'm gonna start doing them now. I haven't done them, and I will file.
Yeah, once you get through the courses, once you get through the courses, don't stop there. Go and read our cases. There is so much information in our cases. There are paragraphs that you can say, wow, I can use this entire paragraph into my case. And you could just cut and paste and pull it over, do whatever you got to do. We got memorandums on all kinds of topics. You could take the whole memorandum and use it. You can add to it, change it, correct it, whatever you want to do with it. You know, just, you know, this is how you learn. And you read these cases.
Yes.
The other thing, okay, you know, is as you're doing that, you should continue a higher education. If you go under our education tab, okay, we have essays and lectures. Okay, we've got American history lectures, we've got common law lectures, we've got trial by jury essay, and this is all audio. We've got a lot of audio stuff, we've got video stuff. We have more articles, lots of articles and essays, and then we have, of course, our, you know, there is also a constitutional class we have up here. I have a feeling, it's been a long time since I looked at that one. I think that might be Michael Bodnarik's. Let me take a quick look at that, essays and lectures.
And I do this through Jan to get a
Yeah, this is Michael Bodnarik. Michael Bodnarik gives a class. There's 20 different videos. You can watch them one after another. We also have the Constitution guy, Carl Miller. You know, his stuff is pretty good. It worked a lot better 20 years ago when he was doing it. Today, they've learned to just ignore that because they've become so emboldened, you know. They're not even hiding. Look at how, you know, how they're so emboldened. They're not even hiding the fact that they're socialists and Nazis. Coming out with the brown shirts, maybe they're wearing a different shirt, who knows, but whatever, the idea or the point. There's a lot of stuff on this page, you know, introduction to individualism and versus what we call collectivism, overview of America, a lot of good videos on this particular page, and you could be here for lots of hours sitting and listening. But, you know, the more and more you dive into these things, you know, some of these things will be repeated. They'll be reinforced here. You'll see it there. And that's how you learn. You know, you dive into a subject and just, you know, just wallow in it, for lack of a better word, but get into it. And the next thing these words and phrases and different places you might quote just, you know, just falls out of your mouth. You say, where did that come from? Because you've been, you know, you've been digging into it. You know, dig into it.
Yes.
Okay.
I will.
We've got to move forward because we've been here
thank
a long
you.
Time. We've got a lot of people.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks a lot. Thank you, John. Okay. We got Anthony, it looks like, from West Virginia.
Yeah.
He's been unmuted. Are you there?
You can hear me all right. Can you hear me all right, guys? Hello?
You're a little low. Let me turn my volume up. Go ahead, talk.
No, let me turn my volume up.
Oh, there you go. I don't know what you did,
okay.
But... Yep.
I turned my volume up. I guess it affects the microphone as well. Turned the speaker volume up. It affects the microphone. So this is Anthony from West Virginia. And I was blessed to be able to gather a couple of my friends together, and we coordinated the state of West Virginia. I think that... Is that coordinate? What did we do, actually? What's that word you guys use?
Yeah,
constituted West Virginia, and I've been in a hiatus for a few years. Went to school. This is my second time checking in for the duration of the call this year. I was wondering if anybody, I guess I don't really have a question, but I'm just wondering if anybody heard the president's speech at West Point that he made recently.
Yeah, the graduation speech.
Yeah, the graduation.
I heard parts of it. Yeah.
Do you recall he told one of the students how great he was because he got a Rhodes scholarship? Can you believe that? You know what Cecil Rhodes is all about? And
that's what Clinton was. He was a Rhodes scholar.
Clinton was a Rhodes scholar.
Yes.
And we're going to send our best of the best of our West Point people over to get to Oxford to study. I mean, I tweeted him. I figured that's a little counterproductive, you know. But I want to... what's the name of this gentleman that's there giving the Constitution, all of the insights on the Constitution? What's his name? He's right there.
What do you mean, one of our courses? What's his name?
He sounds like the gentleman I used to give classes for, the IOTC, International Constitution courses, and he sounds like the same professor that actually did the original.
Are you talking about Brent? Brent Alan Winters that he wrote the Excellence of the Common Law? He's on here right now.
Right. Yeah. I'm just wondering.
Yeah,
if
that's Brent. Brent Winters.
Sure,
Brent Alan
like
Winters.
Yeah, it's so great to hear his voice. Boy, I just used to love using those tapes. We had the old VHS tapes. I was in Montana at the time.
Uh-huh.
It looks like I'm going to be getting back. I'm still listed as a West Virginia coordinator, I think, but my friend has all of the documentation, you know, the stamp that we made and everything for that time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to get that back, but we'll be talking. I'm going to do what I could do. I don't know if I have enough time to be a district coordinator. I don't know if I have enough time to volunteer for that, but we'll be keeping in touch. And just wanted to...
Well, the most important thing you could do is connect with the people who are organizing in your county and attend at least their meetings once a month. Connect with the sheriff and get involved. A couple hours a month, everyone can afford, you know. Sometimes they meet in the evening. Sometimes they might meet on a weekend or something. However, whatever they want, whatever you figure it out. But it only takes a couple hours once a month. And be involved. Everyone should be involved at least at that point, at least at bare minimum. Because remember, this is our country. This is our nation. This is our heritage. And we need to be in control. We must have government by consent, and everybody must participate. Everybody. Everybody should be in the militia. Everybody. Everybody should consider running for committeeman at least once in their life, which is only a matter of about 40 or 50 hours a year. It's not a lot. It's usually around election time, and it's always it's always in the evening except for the election day itself. But even that, you could do the evening, or depending on how you're working. But everybody should be doing it. Everybody should be voting. Everybody should be responding to the grand jury or the trial jury call. Everybody should be partaking in the militia. Even if you don't pick up an arm, you can participate in many different ways. Everybody should be connected with the sheriff. Everybody, should be doing things, okay, on their
right.
County level. And it only requires a couple hours, 2 or maybe 3 hours a month. Who can't give 2 or 3 hours a month in order to save their nation for their posterity, for themselves and their children? Who can't do that?
I wish I could convince people to do that. I've had a radio program here in West Virginia, Princeton, for the last year and a half, spending $200, $250 a month for a half-hour radio program on Sunday, telling people almost all the things you're telling now, not focused on the courts, but just revealing how they need to get involved to take our country back. And,
one of the biggest...
I've been blowing in the wind.
You see, one of the biggest problems, though, and I've seen this in a lot of different organizations, they'll give a lot of information, tell people to get involved, but a lot of people just don't know what to do, where to do, who to connect. They lack the direction because they don't have, any kind of experience in the things that they need to be doing, so it's all alien to them. But, here at National Liberty Alliance, we have put it all together, the connection, the organization, the communications, everything, the everything necessary to do it. And so we've given it all. And that's been one of the big problems. Nobody has really laid out a plan where people can come and say, okay, yeah, I'd like to do something, but what? Well, let me show you. You see, once you connect with your district leaders and you sign up, okay, and you connect with a state leadership maybe, and definitely connect with people in your county or maybe your sister counties next door, and get involved and get to learn what's going on and get participating in what's going on, then that's when we're going to save this nation. But if people aren't willing to do that, then maybe we don't deserve the blessings of liberty.
Actually, you made a good point. You should send them over to the plan to take America back, which we have on the site, and let them read that. Maybe that'll get them going,
Right, and we also have a committee that makes phone calls, a welcoming committee, to welcome people into our, this is something that's been going on for maybe, some months or a year or so now. If you've been a long-time member, we are trying to go back and connect with all of our membership, even people who have come to us maybe 8-10 years ago. Maybe we have. Have we been here 10 years? Might be. I don't know. But in any event,
You have, if you include that work that you did with the Articles of Freedom. I mean, mm-hmm. You guys are the only people online that have the Articles of Freedom. When I search for the Articles of Freedom on the internet, I get one hit, and that's National Liberty Alliance.
Well, we try to have everything that's necessary. I mean, if somebody discovers something that's missing from our education, they should connect with us and let us know, and we'll add it. Because we have tremendous, tremendous, tremendous amounts of information.
Not only that, we participated in that too, John.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, you participated in that.
Right.
I mean, that was Robert Schultz.
We didn't
Schultz.
Just stick it up there.
Robert
we were
Schultz,
actually,
we the people.
We kind of lived it.
And I printed it out about, 15, 12 years ago, 15 years ago, something like that. When did that happen? And,
that was in 2009 and 2010. 2010 when they delivered it, 2009
okay.
when they met.
It was almost 12, almost 12.
About 10 years ago. 10 years ago, yeah.
And anyway, I've been trying to encourage our local Tea Party to grab on to hold one or two of those points there and just get involved in something. Getting people motivated not easy.
No, well, you have to massage the lumps on the log, okay? Every group has lumps on the log, and if there's no one there massaging them, no one there pushing them and prodding them, you know, once you get someone active, and if they're active and you keep them active, you know, make sure they get something to do at least once a week here and there, before you know it, then it becomes part of their habit, and then they start getting it and hopefully start realizing the power and start growing.
Well, we got to take our country back, and so you guys probably hear from me again next week, and I'm going to browse the website there and see, maybe start those classes, get back into them. I'm sure that my old ratings are still there. I don't think you changed anything. So anyway,
I just want to say one thing before you go, Anthony.
Sure.
You did tweet Trump on this Rhodes Scholar thing that he did, right? But if you want to get his attention, do it very early in the morning, because that's when he's actually checking them himself.
Yeah, I got up late today. I tweeted him.
I'm
going
to say, just retweet it. Retweet it again in the morning, and maybe you'll get, you know, hopefully you'll hit him and correct him, because he needs correction on some of that stuff, you know.
I paused his speech, and I wrote the tweet, and then I went back to it. Yeah. So we got to stay together, boys and girls, and make this thing happen, because, you know, I hurt to see where our country is right now. It's painful. It's very painful to see what's happening.
Well, listen,
and
there's talk that they're bringing guns in from the port of Washington and shipping them across the nation, that they're going to make a big push to do another false flag, try to top 9/11. So if we don't do it this way, you're gonna be in a ditch with your gun, and I'm getting too old for that garbage. You know?
Yeah, I hear you. And you know, we've already got our government in place. We just leave everything the way it is, but we enforce the law the way it is now. That's all we got to do. But the people have to stand up.
Yep.
That's how I see it. Okay.
Yep.
See you
okay.
Guys
thank
later.
You, Anthony.
Thank you so much. Yep, you're welcome. Bye-bye.
Yep.
God bless.
Okay, next caller is David from North Carolina.
All right. Can you hear me, Gerard?
I certainly can.
Okay, great. I need to get up with you, John, or both of you, in the very near future, sometime before the week's out. I want to find out what it's going to cost to get an affidavit put in.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
An affidavit on what?
Yeah, what do you mean? What do you mean? What it costs?
That you file in federal court.
Yeah, but what do you mean by what it costs to file an affidavit? We don't charge anything for anybody.
Well,
donations.
Okay.
Now, I mean, if you do a joinder where we do an amicus curiae or a habeas corpus or something like that, you know, we request $100 or more donation. Sometimes people can't afford the $100; they'll give what they can, and sometimes people can afford more and they do give more. And you know, because that's what, you know, we have to get money to buy the paper and mailing it out and the certification and all that stuff. But we don't charge anything, because it'll be...
I've been through all this many, many times with these county courts, and I've probably spent $10,000 to $15,000 messing with them, and they've just about busted me. I get no justice whatsoever. There's no due process of law, as you've already been saying. And so I'm tired of fooling with them. I want to do something to get my paperwork filed and put it where they can't put a summary judgment against it or dismiss it.
Yeah, so you want to move it to federal court for cause.
Absolutely. I
mean, and you could do that while you're wasting your money throwing it at them, but you know, that's their game to wear you down.
That's right.
So that's what I would suggest. You go in there. There's directions in there when you go in there to fill the affidavit, and they'll ask you what, you know, there's a questionnaire there that you look and it leads you along, you know, what kind of a case, you know, is it property, is it this, is it that. just follow that and fill it out, and somebody will get a hold of Jim, usually get a hold of you, you know, somebody.
All right. That sounds right. Good. That's what I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you, David. Good to hear from you,
Thank you, as always. Thank you.
Okay. We got the next caller is a wireless caller. I have no idea who. Maybe you give us your first name and your state. If you're unmuted, go ahead.
Florida, Felicia. This is Florida, Felicia. How you doing?
Say that again. I'm having trouble understanding.
Felicia from Florida. How have you been?
Oh, Felicia. How you doing,
yeah.
Felicia? Long time.
Trying to survive. Trying to survive.
Oh, my
God. I have a quick question for Brent.
Okay.
I was listening, and I had to hang up to actually hold on. I wrote it down.
I believe he's still here.
Okay, where is my question? Where did it go? Okay, if we the people establish the Constitution and is above the Constitution and all legislated law, how were they able to enact the Organic Act of 1871 and maintain that status quo today?
Well, if I can
hear, ignorance maintains it.
Am I being heard? What's that?
Ignorance maintains that.
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead, Brent.
Well, I was just going to say, Congress can do anything they want to do. It doesn't change the fact of the matter. There's a lot of things that are true as a matter of law that people are ignorant of, as John said, or just not paying attention to. But there are two things that must be taken in consideration when a fellow has a legal contest or goes to court or is dealing with the government in any way. Number one, what does the law say? Number two, what could happen anyway? What is really going on? And the fact is that in most people are lawless to varying degrees. I used to say when I come on here, the only remedy for lawlessness is true law. And that's all we have. We have law, the will of God. If it's true law, it's the will of our Maker. It's what He wants. And most of humanity is lawless. Most all the time, government is made up of men. Men run government. And men at their best are still only men at best. And that ain't saying much. Matter of fact, it's worse than that. It's much worse. Men are downright evil. And given the right circumstances, their evil exacerbates until it becomes out of control and there becomes... Well, the things we've seen in government, Obama and the Clintons and the Bushes, and the evils and the murder and the bloodlust and the hate. Well, that's just a picture of us. Who are we kidding? We're the ones that put them in there. You think we're any different than them? Well, at bottom, no, we aren't. We're tainted just like them. The only difference is we don't have enough power. We don't have enough power in our hands to have had it exacerbated to the point they have. That's why it's important. It's important that we keep things in check as much as possible constantly. It's our job to do that never-endingly. And it all starts right in your house and my house. And as I've said often, and I need to say it again, and I need to say it... I just need to keep saying it. I ain't no part of this. It's all wrong. Government is wrong. Why is government wrong? Because we're wrong. We get what we deserve. So what's the remedy to the problem? This Organic Act of 1871 or whatever it is. I've heard of it before, and I've read it, I suppose. Well, all those things.
Yeah, I
just
learned about it in the government consent course. That's how I learned about it. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. Well, just, and you know, you've lived long enough to know that just because the government says it or somebody says it, it ain't necessarily so. And what the government says in law, it ain't necessarily so. That's why we have courts. But the courts aren't, they've become arms of the government. They've been taken over by the spirit of the evil empire. To a great degree. Oh, there are good judges out there. We're seeing them. Let's not lose total faith. Let's say, no, the machinery's in place. Everything's in place. All we need to do is prime. Our Constitution is in place. Separation of powers in place. Our courts are still in place. When our country separated from Britain. Britain told our country, the common law does not apply on our American plantations. I'm quoting. Those are the very words of William Blackstone in his commentaries. The common law does not apply in our American plantations. Whose American plantations? England's. Who's the American plantations? That's the American colonies. The colonies that were planted in America. That's what that means. And they said the common law doesn't apply. Well, we ended up going to war over that question. That's why we went to war with Britain. We didn't go to war with them. They went to war with us, and so we were forced to go to war with them. They came and attacked us. And they said, no, the common law does not apply, that therefore the Second Amendment, or the right to keep and bear arms, under the English Constitution, the English Bill of Rights of 1689, is has a provision almost just like our Second Amendment. And they said, well, it doesn't apply on an American plantation, therefore we're coming to Concord and Lexington, and we're going to get your guns and your arms and your powder. We're going to get all of it. We said, now wait a minute. No, we can't go that far. Well, that's what was going on then, and we had courts in place, just like we have courts in place today, common law courts. All the machinery was in place. They were willing to impanel the jury there, just like we impanel the jury in most all of our courts today when it's warranted in our federal and state courts. That's a common law court. When they impanel the jury, that's a common law feature, only in common law countries. Well, they told the colonists, we're not going to let you impanel juries anymore. That's what they were doing. And they said, now, wait a minute. You can go so far, but that's going too far. We demand, October 14th, 1775, Congress, meeting the first time, wrote a letter to Parliament, said we demand the inestimable right of trial by jury according to the course of our common law. That's what they wanted. Well, the machinery was in place. Britain came to say, no, you can't have the common law courts. And we said, yes, we can. And we went to force of arms over the question. A lot of people were killed. It was bloody. It was downright dirty. It was ugly. We couldn't settle our differences in the courts, so we went to fields of battle and settled our differences there, and we prevailed. And when we prevailed, all during that time, we kept the machinery of our common law courts. They were always there. We just kept using them. And when the war was over, we didn't have a sit-in and occupy and say we're going to throw everything off. We didn't really throw everything off. We kept everything we had. We didn't change anything. The machinery was in place. The only difference was we started using it more in a common law way. And that's what we need to do today. The machinery is in place. The courts are in place. The three branches of government are in place. Our Constitution is in place. Our state constitutions are in place. We just need to use them. And what Jay Leno said years ago, Congress has decided, he was joking, Congress has decided that we ought to let Russia use our Constitution. And then he added, shucks, we're not using it anymore. We may as well let them use it. Well, that's it. We're not using it the way we ought to be using it. We don't need a new Constitution. We don't need a Con-Con Convention. We don't need to throw everybody out of office and start over. It won't do any good. You just put people in office that are just as rotten as the people you had before. How rotten is that? Well, it's pretty rotten. The Bible says we're all concluded under sin. There is none that seeketh after God. Our righteousness is as filthy rags. On and on and on. The first thing we must do is recognize, according to God, who we are. And if we can do that, then we can say, okay, the machinery's in place. Let's just start using it. We have a constitution. We have state constitutions. We have common law governments. All the words, all our provisions. We just need to learn. What is our common law? Back when the American colonies separated from Britain, Blackstone's commentaries, which were about the common law, sold more copies by far and away in the colonies of 3 million people than they did in England of 8 million people. And we've got the records of the book that's on the website, Excellence of the Common Law. In that book, I've cataloged, I have a whole section on Blackstone's commentaries, where they sold, who sold them. We have the records from the printing companies. You can read it. Well, what does that mean? That means that at that time, in the United States, in the colonies, in the New World here, we were more interested in our common law than they were in England. That's where the power came from. That's what's created resolve to do the things we had to do to separate from Britain. You want to separate from this vermin that's got their bony fingers on the levers of power? Well, then you must know the law. How do you do that? Well, if you're hungry for it, you'll get it. What did Jesus Christ say He said, seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will open to you. And those verbs that in the Greek text there are what we call the present active indicative. That means the action that they communicate is continuous. Keep on seeking. Don't stop. Keep on knocking. He's telling people, if you seek the truth, you will find it. Is the common law the truth? Well, it's one of those two volumes that we believe God has revealed to us. One unwritten, our common law, is unwritten, meant to be observed. The opinions and findings, that's why our courts at common law call what they say the findings of the court, the findings of the jury. What are they finding? What are they looking for? What are they seeking? Seek and you shall find. They're seeking our common law. Jesus Christ was clear on that point, and if you're looking for it, if you're looking for it and you don't stop looking for it, God will privilege you by showing it to you. He'll open your eyes. Show me, said David, wondrous things from thy law. Thy law is written. That's what he's talking about there. He's talking about the Bible. The same is true for the law unwritten. And David wrote Psalm 19 where he talked about the law written and the law unwritten. Seek and you shall find. And don't stop seeking. Don't stop knocking. And knock, he says, and it will be opened unto you. What is the important thing about all this, to be seen in all this? That the will of our Maker is what he wants us to seek. What is the will of our Maker? We call the will of the sovereign, the true sovereign, or whatever you think is the sovereign, you'll call it law. We call the will of our Maker law. Now, all of the students of law, the common lawyers through the century, and the Christian theologians have made clear that wherever you go, whatever religion you've got or claim, whoever you think is sovereign, his will is law to you. That's right. If you're a Romanist, you think the will of the Pope is law. He's your sovereign. Well, but if you're a Biblicist, you think the will of God is sovereign. The will of God is as he reveals it in those two volumes. If you're an Islamicist, you think the will of Allah is sovereign. He's your sovereign. That's your law. If you're a Mormon, you think that the will of the church is law. It isn't. That's false. But if you're a Christian man or woman, it is the laws of nature, unwritten in creation, that God has shown us. And the laws of nature is God written in the Bible. That's law. It's the will of the true sovereign, as James says, the only true lawgiver in the epistle of James. So it's refreshing to me. I've taken the courses. I'm looking. Keep looking is the admonition of the Savior himself. Back to you, John or Gerard.
You need to be preaching. That's all I got.
Well, I don't need to be. Maybe I was. You should have had. Well, I guess maybe these are recorded. I don't know. Yeah, they are. Well, that's
okay.
Kind words. What's that?
You just closed that door.
Well, you're the one that lit the fuse, not me. Right?
Say again?
You asked the question. I say you're the one that lit the fuse by asking the question.
Yeah, you did. I almost started catching the Holy Ghost for a minute. Okay. Okay. So, all right. I one more question. Okay. So, if the Organic Act, if they sold it off to the deep state and made the United States no longer a country, but made it a corporation, and the Federal Reserve took over, is that the reason why Trump took over? Because from what I heard, Trump took over the Federal Reserve.
I heard that too. I don't know that that's true. I did hear that. I read it. Maybe John or Gerard have read it.
Yeah, I've heard that from quite a few sources, and I believe it. And he's setting up another economic system to bring us back to gold and silver, and he's been doing that while all this craziness is going on. He's been busy working on that in the background, and many, many other things. I mean,
well, he put the Federal Reserve inside the Treasury is what he did, and so now now basically, as the president, he has control over the Treasury and the Federal Reserve. Look, the Federal Reserve was not federal, and it wasn't a reserve; it was a lie anyway. It wasn't, it wasn't really a government organization ever. So by him taking the Federal Reserve and putting it under the Treasury, that put him in control of our money.
And they're going to disappear and go down. They're going to go down once he audits them. As soon as he audits them, you know that it's over. That's it. It's done. Because what they're going to reveal through that audit, look, This president is spending money like no other president. He rebuilt our military. He's got the money for the wall. He's got all these different opportunities for people that he set up. He's got he's going to be working on the infrastructure. I mean, he has spent more money than anyone else. And you know why? Because he's getting back what they stole from us. He has no intentions of paying this debt back. That's their problem. We need to get restored, and he's making them restore us. I don't know how much they realize of this, but they are suffering right now, and they're just chomping at the bit because of what this guy's doing. But once he shuts it down and that whole system collapses, he's trying to make a soft landing and moving us into gold and silver. I don't know how that's going to happen because, you know, it's going to take a lot for the people to figure out what the true value of money is anymore because people don't really know what that is. Money is a joke these days. I mean, the dollar in my calculations, okay, working off of gold and silver going back into, you know, coming into the 20th century and what it was like for 100 years before that, okay, the dollar, according to that 100-year period and what the gold and silver was, is only valued today at 2 cents. So every time you, and if you think about that, just think about that, you know, maybe even 4 cents, but 2 cents is more like it. But it's hard to figure it out. It really is hard. At some point, it's not going to be worth anything because it's so inflated. But let's say 4 cents. If you think about it at 4 cents, $1 is 4 cents. Think about what it was when you were a kid, and I don't know how old you are, but if you're going back into the 60s and the 70s and even the 50s, you know, you go out and buy a candy bar, it used to cost a nickel. Today, it costs you $1.25, $2. Well, that's the dollar. If the dollar's worth 3 cents, it's 6 cents. If the dollar's worth 4 cents, it's 8 cents. If the dollar's worth 2 cents, then it's only 2 cents. Okay, and that's the when I was growing up, and my you know memory of as far as being awake, so to speak, to some degree, was in the 60s. You know, because I was very young. I was born in the early 50s, but the 60s and the 70s. Even at that point in time, the dollar was already being destroyed. I remember the price of gold was something like an ounce of gold back then. I think was something like maybe 130, 150 bucks, which would be $150. Okay, where it should only be an ounce of gold. The value of an ounce of gold is 19 silver dollars. That's the ratio. 19 silver dollars equals 1 ounce of gold. Or let's say 20 silver dollars equals an ounce of gold. Okay, so again, how to adjust to that's going to be a little difficult. If he comes out with the silver certificate and does what Kennedy was going to do, maybe that could be a gradual working down of its value of the dollar to the silver dollar as we transfer over to that. I don't know how that's going to work. It's going to be difficult to figure out because what are you going to charge for what, you know? It's just once you get rid of inflation, everything will come back to normal.
They say about him. I see the negative stuff they say about him, and then I research the stuff he's talking about, and I'm like, and I post on Facebook, I say, do you all understand what he's doing? And people get mad at me.
That's ignorant.
That's fake news. Don't forget.
Yeah, but remember, the people who are really angry and doing these stupid, silly things, they're so ignorant, they have no idea they're destroying themselves, they're destroying any rights that they may possibly have. They don't understand that. It's ignorant. Look, we need to get an education back into the schools, a real education.
Listen, everything that's going down right now has been planned. This is a plan that they've had in place for many, many years. There's a report from the Rockefeller Foundation that spells out exactly what's going on today. You go on to Richie from Boston on YouTube and read and go in and look at the, it was like three videos ago, and it's called, hang on a minute, just give me a half a section here. It's called,
I think it goes back to the Protocols of Zion.
I understand, but like in modern day, where Rockefeller actually sit down. And wrote this plan. It's exactly what's going on with Antifa and the banks and the pandemic. It was all planned. And this was written 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And I'm telling you read this, and it's an actual document. You can go get it offline. It's on there. They don't hide it. They put it out there for the public to read. They're proud of their work.
What's the name of it?
It's called, the guy is Richie from Boston. If you go on YouTube and you go into the subscriptions, look up, it's RFB. Is it red, right? Richie from Boston. And it's called Share This. You're Being Distracted From This, is what the name of the video is.
Hmm.
If you just put it in there, it's like, let me see here. It's like, and it's very good because it, you know, it's the second video that's on there right now. So it was like 2 days ago.
Richie from Boston.
It's got a big
I know, name. I watched the documentary from Michael Tellinger. And he was talking about how Trump took over the Federal Reserve, and I posted. I'm like, y'all see what? Look what Trump is really doing. Y'all just keep posting negative stuff about him, but look what he's really doing. Are you really listening to his speeches?
Nobody knows about bankruptcy better than he does. He's done it so many times. He understands how to navigate a bankruptcy. You know what I mean?
One of the major problems with the people and what they've done to us is they have taught us what to think and not how to think. And they have told us what truth is without giving us sources. And people need to stop believing anything they don't have a source to. They need to go back to where it originated from. Is this true? Is this accurate? You know, what is it? Because they say all kinds of stuff, and people believe it. People believe it. You know, I'm working right now on a grand jury handbook for grand jurists, okay? And I'm looking at the federal grand jury handbook to see what they've got, and I've got some other sources I'm looking at. And they're filling these people's minds with nothing but lies. It's unbelievable. And of course, they don't have a source, but you know, when the grand jury is pulled together, they believe what this guy's, what these people are telling them, and that's that. So, look at, you know, we got to look for sources. You know, National Liberty Alliance, we do everything we do, we put a lot of footnotes and sources, which gives the sources where we got our information. People need to trace it back, and they need to do a little homework. And if they don't have a source, don't believe it until you know you can look back to see if these things are so.
Well, all that liberal media, you're right, John, all they say is anonymous sources or sources say, but they never tell you what the source is. It's a lie. It's a bald-faced lie. They don't have a source. So anyway,
well,
that being said.
Regardless of what you tweet, I understand what you're doing now, so they can get mad at me all they want. I don't care.
Yeah. Well, that's good. They've been kicking me off too, but I'm persistent. I keep coming back. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, it's good to hear from you, Felicia. It's been a long time.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. We got one more caller, and I'm going to put him in now, and that makes a record. We'll actually have all the callers done if we can answer their question in the next 10 minutes or so. Okay. Thank you, Felicia. God bless you, and don't be a stranger, okay?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, we got a wireless caller from the 504 area code. Maybe give us your first name and your state. I don't know where 504 is, but you can tell us if you're there. Hello, wireless caller. Maybe we put him to sleep. You got to unmute yourself. Let's see, is 504 muted? I don't know.
Hi, my name is Sarah.
Yeah, there you go.
From New Orleans, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So it's Sarah from New Orleans.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
I'm thrilled to talk to you guys. I've been looking at the site and learning as much as I can about common law and just all of the educational material you have on the site. There's one question that I've struggled with because I've ran into so many different YouTube videos and websites that have conflicting, I guess, information on it, and that's in the court system. When someone is charged with a crime and they have already given jurisdiction by going and entering a plea, hiring an attorney, that kind of thing. Is there one particular document that you should submit to kind of take back the signatures for,
Yes. I'm sorry to mean to interrupt. Look, at jurisdiction can be challenged at any time. So you can always challenge. You can start out by challenging the jurisdiction, and we do have that information on our site and our paperwork. So it doesn't matter.
Even after being unjustly judged and even sent to jail, and even if your sentence has been fulfilled and you're out and you've discovered the fraud, you have opportunity to get restitution.
Okay, because I have a few people I'm trying to help their court cases along, and one gentleman already we challenged jurisdiction before he went to plea, and so that one when he walked in, they were like a new date. He doesn't have to enter a plea, so they I guess knew what they were up against with that one. But the other one, from what I understand, when you hire a private attorney, you grant them jurisdiction by accepting an attorney. So when you submit a challenge of jurisdiction, would they come back and say, well, you granted us jurisdiction because you have an attorney?
I don't think they'd ever say that. If you could challenge, even if you have an attorney, and at that point you might want to fire the attorney, you know what I mean? Because, right, like John says, you can challenge it at any time. And then they sit there and tell you, well, you know, the attorney established it and this and that, and you say, well, it's fraud. And guess what? So now I'm firing him, and I'm challenging jurisdiction. And don't forget, they can't just claim jurisdiction. They have to show it. They have to prove it.
But they will try.
Oh, yeah. They'll say, well, I have it because I'm sitting here, and you answered the thing, and I got this black robot.
Here is a United States Supreme Court ruling, and it's a maxim ultimately, okay, because what they're saying is absolute truth, all right, and when you challenge the jurisdiction of the court, okay, once jurisdiction is challenged, it must be decided. Keyword, decided. That means a judge or someone has got to listen in to both sides. And it cannot be the judge who already believes he's got jurisdiction. You see, you challenge jurisdiction, and then the judge turns around and says, okay, I've considered it, and I decided I have jurisdiction. Let's move on. Well, I object, Your Honor. I think you need to recuse yourself because you are biased, and you've already decided. You already decided that before the question was even asked because you believe you got jurisdiction. But the law says that jurisdiction, once challenged, must be decided, which means another judge, okay, and you've got to go to an appellate system, ultimately, an appeal judge, which would be usually, I think it's three judges for the appellate court for the appeals. But in any event, it's got to be appealed, and then it's got to be decided. And if you don't like that, you can move it to the next level. And if you don't like that, you can move it into federal court for cause. Me, I like to just go right to federal court for cause because they don't have the jurisdiction, okay? And then when you go to federal court for cause, you can put in a wherefore clause because you've been injured, and you can go after, damages for violating your unalienable right of due process to begin with. And if you've been jailed and removed and you've been in prison, and well, they kidnapped you, okay? There's all kinds of 243 and 245. Well, there's a couple of them in there which talks about being kidnapped. They're acting under the color of law, okay? There's a lot of stuff that they've already got in USC 18, which is federal law, but that applies everywhere to anybody who is an elected individual, particularly people in courts, that are really, hijacking the court and taking us into jurisdictions unknown. And we got a lot of papers written on this stuff, so if you read our papers, you can kind of draw right off that and pull this paragraph out and pull that phrase out and whatever you want. You know, we got lots of quotes, lots of sources, lots of information.
Hey, John.
And, yeah.
Just a point of interest here. Since Sarah is in Louisiana, doesn't Louisiana have a different type of law?
Yeah, Louisiana, I found out from Brent, as a matter of fact, that he mentioned it, that they've always been outside of the common law. Isn't that true, Brent? Was it you that said that?
Yeah, I think they're using whatever France uses or something, right?
Well, they're using something. They're using jurisdictions unknown, period. That's all I know.
They have parishes and all kinds of stuff that's different.
Right, we do. We have parishes. It's from what I understand, it's something that goes back to the Louisiana Purchase. And someone had written a paper about how when you challenge jurisdiction, especially from the beginning, they'll never be able to prove jurisdiction. It has to be dismissed ultimately. But that was another thing that I guess kind of confused me, because in the paperwork that I've read from other sources, they said that the main main element to challenging jurisdiction was the importance of submitting the denial of corporate existence. And
no, you don't have to get into any of those things. Look at anything that when Louisiana became a state, they agreed to the Constitution, and the people you know are under that protection of the Constitution. It doesn't matter where they were before they entered into the statehood. But what matters is after they entered into the statehood, they entered into a compact, we'll call it, which is the Constitution. And they have to adhere to it. It's the law of the land, period. End of subject. Nothing else to talk about. I would take anything. I would immediately, I wouldn't even bother going through that system. I'd go right into the federal courts and for cause.
That would take the wind right out of their sails, I think, because they're not a common law. They don't consider themselves a common law state. You know that they're not under. And meanwhile, it says that the Constitution is guaranteeing us a republic, which part of that is being under the common law, right?
Okay, so you wouldn't bother with the denial of corporate existence at all. And is there any would there be any harm in submitting one?
No. Stay away from that. Look at all that's a fraud. Give it. Once you start to get into that language and converse with them on the fiction of law, that they're built upon, because they are they're a de facto court, and you need to be moving into a de jure court. And the difference between a de jure court and a de facto court, ultimately, one is fiction and is built upon in the cases that we have, unfortunately, civil law, which has nothing to do with we the people, has nothing to do with the Constitution, has nothing to do with justice at all. And even the way they changed it over and the language they said and the language they used. You know, the reason they said that, and they changed it by rule, not even law. It's Rule 2, a federal Rule 2, written by the American Bar Association and blessed by the United States Supreme Court and still upheld by those nine people up there in Washington, D.C. They still are holding to that Rule 2. Look, that's a crime. They have a duty. They have a duty to let the people know that is not the law, and we're not going to hold it no more. And they need to open up common law courts. But they're refusing to let these courts go to the back to the people. They're refusing, and it's like Moses going to Pharaoh. You know, the day is coming. Judgment day is coming for them. It's not going to be too pretty for them, because they're going to jail.
I bet. And so in all of the cases that you've challenged jurisdiction, especially for so-called criminal charges, how has there ever been
occasionally you get something. There's only been a couple of situations where we've had success there, and they won't even acknowledge it, but they let the person go. We're all good with that, but they haven't faced justice. But now, you know, all the cases we're doing, we're filing not only in the court, the Northern District of New York, it's a federal district. Not only are we filing it there, we post it up on our website. We file it with William Barr, the Attorney General. We file it with the United States Supreme Court. And we also send a copy to the President of the United States. And we intend on justice at the end of the day. We're not interested in half justice. Half justice is no justice at all. Just like we're not interested in a half a right, because a half a right is no right at all. We're not interested in giving up any of our rights, because it's a violation of our rights, period. And we have that liberty. We've been blessed with that liberty, providing we live under that law. Right now we're not living under that law, but we want to get back under that law. And that's what we need to do. you know, these people, they will do everything to prevent a win. But nevertheless, you know, at the end of the day, all this is on the record, and justice will prevail. It will prevail. If that, then if it doesn't, America will not prevail.
Yeah, grim future. But they have always.
But that all depends on the people. By the way. That'll only happen if the people step up and say, "Yeah, we want to do something about it. I want to learn. I got to figure out what's going on. I need to protect the future of my children and myself, and my family, my neighbors, my friends, their posterity. Look at if the people don't want to do the job." There's no one there to do it for them, then let's just give it all up. And God will curse us instead of bless us.
That's true. Well, thank you so much for your time and everything that you guys do. I'll definitely be joining in and learning. I started taking classes and participating, so I really look forward to speaking to you guys again in the future.
Okay. Thank you.
Right,
that brings
you.
Us
good
to
night.
12:01. We're right on time today. Oh, my goodness gracious. Anyway, thanks for coming, everybody, and we'll be back next week, next Monday. Same time, same channel. See you then. God bless. Keep your powder dry.